Hey, Spittin' Chiclets listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 125 of Spittin' Chiclets, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka. It's going to go around the table and say hello to the fellas this evening. Start out in the dirty desert with our boy, Biz Nasty, Paul Bessonnet. What's up, brother?
Hello, everybody.
Ooh, stealing my thunder. Next, we got a man, I don't know if Whitney's on his CB, on his trucker radio, but he's commuting back to Boston. Ryan Whitney, what's up, brother? Where's your exact location right now?
What up? I'm back. Passing exit 2B Webster Ave on like 95 North. There's a trucker next to me. He's probably got a hooker in the car too. Some of those truckers are filthy animals. Dude, I'm giving him the dude. He won't give it to me. I'm too old. What's going on, guys?
Not much. Fucking snorting truckers.
You're a fucking clown.
Snorting truckers delight, no doubt. And finally, our producer down in New York City, Mikey Gurnelli. What's up, brother?
What's up, boys? I'm very excited. We have a ton of new merch dropping this week, including some awesome ugly sweaters. So I'm very excited for those, boys.
What did you get the rat in your room?
Oh, yeah.
So boys, he's gone, I think. We got these like sonar things that you plug into all the outlets, and I haven't seen him. So I think he's gone, and I think I won the war.
Yeah, he's gone, except for the 17 million other rats and mice that live on that godforsaken island with you.
That's so true.
That's all right.
Dude, I love how you're saying a sonar thing. Like, it's a thing. You don't know what it is. You didn't just get a mouse trap?
No, we got old school mouse traps, but we have these, like, sonar things. I don't know. My roommate got it for us, and I don't know. We just plug them in all the things, and these little fuckers aren't around anymore, so I think they work.
Fucking shred the Mises to pieces. All right, boys. Monday, we had this year's Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. Pretty good class. And right now, I think the last couple of years, we've gotten the classes of guys we grew up watching. Well, maybe not so much Grinnelli, the youngster of the group. But all these guys, we had the pleasure and joy of watching. And you know, as they played, we knew we were watching Hall of Fame careers. Let's go through the roll call here. The guys, the one lady who made the Hall of Fame. Let me find my notes right here. Martin St. Louis, Spittin' Chiclets alumni. Martin Brodeur, probably the best. What do you call it? Like everything on the line goalie in history of the game. Willie O'Ree, the first black to play in the NHL, in addition to he started the diversity program with the NHL to branch out to children all over the continent. Alexander Yakushev of the fabled Soviet teams of the 70s. Jaina Hefford was a Canadian women's player. And good old Gary Bettman was inducted into the Hall of Fame as well. So, guys, did you have a chance to catch any of the speeches or any of the ceremonies the other night, Biz?
I did not, but you know, a few guys that once again I grew up watching. That's kind of nice because before the last couple of classes, I felt like out of touch, and I'm not much of a historian. I didn't watch a ton of hockey growing up. I was too busy playing it, making the NHL. Not a big deal. One thing I would say is I'd put Marty Brodeur in the body defying science category. Of that generation, like where like you would probably see him walk in the street and be like, oh, that's just your average Joe, but no, that's actually the greatest goaltender that ever lived. Would you agree, Whit?
Yeah, I mean he has all the records. He had 100, I think it's 125 shutouts, right around that. I don't know if I have the number exactly right. His wins will never, it looks like they'll never be touched. He's just, I mean, it was 22 years of that guy, 22 years of him just making big saves. He also was, I mean, I don't know if he was the first. He was definitely the best to play in the puck. He was pretty much a third D-man. He was just skating out there, roly-poly, bing-bang, tape-to-tape, like better than most D-men. And then he'd make these six saves, and he was a kind of a hybrid. He wasn't, you know, butterfly. He just had his own style. I guess Hasek did too. So, I mean, that was the night was awesome. I mean, I loved Martin St. Louis' speech. We posted a little bit of it on Spittin' Chiclets, I think, of, you know, how he's saying, don't ever give up. I mean, usually when you think of like a kid making the NHL, they go through adversity, whether they're 12 years old or 10 years old. People are like, oh, you can't play in the NHL. What do you want to be? I want to be in the NHL. Oh, pick something else. Can't do that. I mean, that's not really adversity, but it's people telling you can't do it. That's what everyone's used to. He had to deal with that, not only growing up, but when he was in the NHL. Calgary signed him out of college, but then they waived him. I mean, he had a team quit on him. He ends up being in the Hall of Fame. Are you shitting me? I was working with EJ Raddick this week. He mentioned that he was scouting with Dallas when he played at UVM with Eric Perrin. They were freak shows, absolute freaks up in Vermont, just dummying people, probably crushing Ben and Jerry's after. And even then, the other scouts would say, you got to go see this kid play. You got to go see him play. He's like, oh, well, who drafted him? Nobody. He won't play in the NHL. He's too little, but he's incredible in college. So his speech was awesome. It was a cool night. Willie O'Ree, well-deserved. What the fuck took him so long to put Big Willie in? I mean, God, that guy's been the first black player ever to play the Jackie Robinson of hockey. You got to get him in sooner. So I'm glad that he's finally there. I met him last year. Just a hell of a man.
No, I a lot of good points there. I'm going to go back to Marty Brodeur, probably known best for his rebound control, his timely saves. Yeah. He's an absolute gamer. I actually heard that he used to play a game. You know, we all play rebound. He used to play one where it was he had to control the rebounds, where if he could end up getting it in the mesh above the glass, where he would score points, and that's how he worked on his rebound control, just to like kill plays and, you know, help out his defenseman. Of course, he was unbelievable at playing the puck too. Moving on to St. Louis, I mean, he was kind of one of those guys that paved the way for where the NHL headed as far as those little guys who,
yeah, I mean,
Theo Fleury was probably the guy before him that was, you know, just a little guy out there, but it fucking sucked, man. And the game's gotten better ever since those guys paved the way for scouts and teams giving smaller guys with speed who are skillful more of an opportunity. I mean, I bet you, you know, older people who watched these small guys playing growing up could think of a handful of guys who probably got, I wouldn't say blackballed, but just weren't even considered to make the NHL because of their size. Like back then, that's just the way the mentality was. You needed to be big, over 6 foot. You needed to be close to 200 pounds. And that's why you were going in the first round. And, you know, of course, you mentioned the adversity he had to go through in order to make it. Ends up being a Stanley Cup champion, league MVP. I want to say, what does he have, 2 gold medals? Actually, he was left off the one team, and that was, I think, a rift between him and Yzerman, and that's how it got going.
But he made it.
He did make
it. But then he made it because of an injury. He won the World Cup of Hockey with LeCavier and Brad Richards after they won the Stanley Cup. 2004, I think he won the Cup, MVP, Ted Lindsay, and then he won the World Cup. So incredible. And what you're saying about smaller players, it's so true, because I can remember growing up and wanting to be in the NHL so bad, all I thought about. And I remember constantly being like, well, at least I have the height. Like, no matter what, I have the height. Some guys have no chance. You know, the guys that are smaller, just no, like in my mind at that point, oh, he's no chance. So at least I'm somewhat there with having the height. And that did suck for a lot of guys. And I played with some incredible players who really didn't get a fair enough shake because of their size. And now it's different. So you do think of other kids that are never thinking, oh, I can't play in the NHL. Not the kids are out there doing it. I hope they aren't. But Martin St. Louis proved that he certainly didn't.
That's a great point, Whit. And R.A., I want to talk to you about this. Whit mentioned it. It took him a long time to put Willie O'Ree in. If anything, if I can spin it into a positive, now that social media has gotten so big, I'm almost kind of happy they did wait this long, because so many people are able to see his induction and how important it is to bring in like the multiculturalism and diversity into the game. And now he's able to, you know, to speak on it. And of course his induction speech touched a lot on that. So, you know, yeah, did it take him too long to do it? Sure. But I'm glad that he was able to do it on this big of a stage, and congratulations to him. And Christ, we talked about the adversity that St. Louis faced. Could you imagine the fucking adversity that guy faced?
Yeah, you're right, Biz. If it did happen 25 years ago, then, you know, he might have just kind of been lost in a little bit of the dustbin of history today. People are like, oh, Willie O'Ree, yeah, he was the first black guy, and really no connection to him because we haven't seen him, haven't heard of him. But he's been such a presence for the last couple of decades since he took the job with the NHL, and, you know, the first diversity officer, you know, and spreading the gospel of hockey to inner city youths and black and Latino kids who otherwise aren't exposed to the game, and, you know, kids who are poor and stuff. They say basically, I mean, from what I've read, he's getting inducted as much for that as he is for, you know, being the first black player. It's kind of a twofold thing because he is going in as a builder, if I'm not mistaken. He went in as a builder, not as a player, because, you know, I think he played 45 games, which is irrelevant. I mean, he was the, you know, he broke the barrier, and I think it was almost 20 years before there was the second black player in the league. It was wow. Quite a lull afterwards. Yeah, it was his name escapes me, the fellow that played for the Capitals in the early 70s. It was great to finally get him in. Yeah, like I think that's a good point, because the build-up maybe made us appreciate him a little more than if we were just reading about him from 20 years ago. Another quick note on Marty St. Louis. I texted you guys the story last night in The Athletic, and I do constantly reference that site because the hockey journalism there is fucking incredible. There were so many good writers who got laid off. The Athletic scooped them up, and they're doing, like I said before, what newspapers used to do. There's a tremendous article on Marty's Game 6 overtime game winner in the 2004 Stanley Cup. They talk to everybody. They break down the play. You should take a read of it if you haven't. Obviously, our listeners as well. And then just going back to Brodeur, man. I mean, he had a 9.12 save percentage and a 2.24 goals against, 124 shutouts. And you think about, like, a lot of the era he did that in. It was before the, Buzzy start back in 91-92, man. There was still some, bad goaltending back then. There was still some outrageous numbers being put up, and the fact he was able to have such good numbers considering he had, a lot of the high-scoring heyday still there. Tribute to him. Also, I just want to mention Jana Heffern. She did win four straight gold medals. I don't want to give the woman short shrift here. Four straight gold medals on top of a nice post-Olympic career. And Yakushev was also in the 72 Summit Series, which I'm sure all your Canadian grandfathers and great uncles always talk about, Biz, frequently.
Yeah, and to touch more on Jana there, she was the only woman inducted in this class, of course, finish off her career in the NWHL. With the Brampton Thunder, and then, of course, with the Canadian Women's National Team. I don't want to – what's that? Sorry.
Who won the gold medal in women's hockey this year?
Oh, the United States.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure.
Oh. You're going to interrupt me for that? Well, Jana did win four, as you mentioned, RA, in 2002, 2006, 2010, and 2014, Witt. So I just wanted to remind you of those. and of course, addition to a silver medal in 1998. So congratulations to her. We got to give the ladies some mad respect. And of course, you touched on it too, Gary Bettman.
Yeah, he's not the first commissioner to be elected to Hall of Fame in his respective sport. In fact, quite a few of them do get in. I don't know if it's a payback from the owners that the guy worked for. Bettman, he gets shit on all the time. He still gets booed. I love the way he kind of eats it up. But if you look back where this league was before he took over and where it is now, hell, man, I have no problem with him going in the Hall of Fame. I mean, the growth of this game under his stewardship has been fucking incredible. I mean, we talked 25 years ago, the contract the league signed with TV partners, it was just over $5 million a year. I mean, that gets you a fucking third line forward for 1 year nowadays. And that's what they had to dole out between 30 or 20-something teams back then. So the league's exploded under Bettman, and I'm sure people will cry about it, but I really have no issue with them going in. What about you, Witz?
Yeah, me neither. The more, I kind of heard about – well, not heard, but realized what's happened since he took over, the more I understand it. You just went into a good description of it. But, I mean, think of the last few Stanley Cup finalists. You know, you got Nashville, you got San Jose, the Kings have won, Anaheim's won a cup. And all these places weren't around. Tampa's been there. It's impressive to see all the places that weren't considered. I actually heard he hates the term non-traditional hockey market. I guess it like drives him nuts. But it's very impressive to see where these teams have come from and where they are now. They're all over the entire United States, Canada. And because of that, you're seeing kids, no doubt about it, because of that, kids are coming from different places. Kids are coming from Florida, Austin, Matthew, Scottsdale. We've talked about this at length. And it goes back to Gary Bettman as part of the reason why and making sure that these cities got teams. And so to put him in the Hall of Fame, I understand that. I think at times booing him is just – I think people just do it for just because, like, the guy next to him is doing it. I mean, I don't really know why you're actually booing him. The lockouts piss people off. But hopefully we don't have another one for a little while. That could be a touchy subject. I've already started thinking if there's one, do we keep doing chicklets? We'll be fucked. We'll have nothing to talk about. We can talk about our, all of our lives. Shit, we can't have a lockout for chicklets. But good for Bettman. Get in the hall. Enjoy it. Have a good night. He actually had some humor in his speech, too. Oh, quickly before we move on. Marty St. Louis, it was sick because the Lightning were playing the Sabres the next night. They actually lost. Buffalo's on a tear. Mikey Grinnelli with the over on the points. But all of his ex-teammates from Tampa, Ryan Malone was there. Teddy Purcell's going to come on. We're also dropping a Brent Sopel interview. We haven't mentioned that. But Teddy, we're going to talk to him. So that was pretty cool to have some ex-teammates. That shows how much of a good guy Marty was or is. Aww.
Yeah, I think they had to bring in fucking two plane loads of guys that were there for his speech. Whit, you just touched on it. Teddy Purcell was there to honor Martin St. Louis and, of course, watched the induction ceremony. I would imagine that none of us on this podcast ever make it there. So what we are going to do is bring Teddy on to – well, maybe Grinnelli will. You never know. Like NHL fucking spit and chicklets producer, but we're going to bring him on for his behind the scenes look at it. He's going to talk about it more in depth. I thought that would be cool for our listeners to experience that. And to touch on what you just touched on too, Whit, was
the Buffalo
Sabres 7-2-2 in their last 11 games, 4 wins in a row. They're in the first wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Grinnelli, you are not superstitious at all, and you will talk about it. You've been yelling it from the mountaintops. You took an unbelievable futures bet, and the Sabres continue to roll.
They're the guys. I love them. I'm riding with the Sabres team. I was talking to Witt about it last night, and like at the beginning of the year, all three of you guys were pumping Florida's tires, and I sat back and said, I think that Buffalo's top nine is better than Florida's top nine, and when you look at them, I just think it's true. And Witt kind of gave it back to me last night that Florida's top nine might have more points. But, I mean, I just think when you look at the guys and, like, it's just a solid, solid lineup, top to bottom. And now that Dahlin's going to learn to actually play and, like, he'll learn from Rasmus Ristolainen and those guys, I mean, I think it's inevitable that they're going to be in the playoffs, boys.
Oh. Ooh. Old takes exposed. I hope so. It's fun to watch. But you're getting a little carried away right now, Mikey.
I have to. I either have to go all in or I can't go in at all. You know, if you do something, you got to do it 100%.
That's what she said.
Hey, Mikey. Well, sorry. All right. Podcast. Tell the story about the ordering of the drink last night.
Oh, this is bad.
Let's hear it, and then we're going to move on to RA. Let's hear this quick.
All right, so
I think it's end of the podcast. We're grooving through hockey right now.
Okay, let's save it. All right, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, Grinnelli, I mean, there's still a lot of pucks left, but you do have to be impressed with what the Sabres have done so far. It's fun to watch Chicklets alumni Jack Eichel tear it up too. And there was a trade in the NHL yesterday, Wednesday, but before we get to that, let's bring on our buddy Teddy Purcell to get his perspective on the Hall of Fame induction and a few other things.
This interview is brought to you by Herbal Active. It is the CBD product we've been talking about nonstop. It is unbelievable for pain management, for mental awareness, for anxiety, for anxiousness. All the guys have been using it. Promo code, of course, BIZ20 for 20% off. That is Herbal Active, URBALACTIV.com. That's Herbal Active. They've hired a social media team where they can answer all your much needed questions and everything you need to know about CBD. It is 100% hemp based CBD. There's no THC. So check them out, herbalactive.com. And you can check them out on Instagram and Twitter. That's where they will answer all your questions. Mikey, please fix that. Thank you very much. Enjoy the interview.
We are now pleased to bring in one of our most requested guests after his big-time appearance last spring, Teddy Purcell, coming off a Hall of Fame induction for his former teammate, Martin St. Louis. He was with a bunch of guys, including Ryan Malone. Was Bugsy scooping ice out of people's drinks and chugging them?
Oh, we were doing it all. Set the tone. Malone was coming in hot.
So how was it? Give me the breakdown of when you got up there, who you went out to dinner with, Marty's speech, all that. Give us the back info here.
I mean, it was so awesome. Bugsy actually called me like a month ago
and was like, hey, have you talked to Marty? And we do some business stuff with Marty. So I was like, yeah, we talk like here and there, texting. He's like, you got to call him right now. I'm like, man, I hate secrets. Just tell me what the fuck's going on. He wouldn't tell me. And then finally I called Marty and he was like, yeah, I want to invite you to like my Hall of Fame induction. I was like, whoa. Like I didn't expect it at all. So that was super cool. So I got up there, like the ceremony wasn't until Monday, but I'm like, fuck, I'm never going to get invited to one of these again. So I'm coming in early. So I scooted in on Saturday morning and I get to the hotel and they're like, oh, hey, Mr. Purcell, welcome to Hall of Fame. I'm like, oh, thanks for having me. And then it was actually super nice of the Tampa owner, Mr. Vinnick, who's the nicest dude ever. I get there, I check in, and my hotel was paid for. Everything was paid for. My tickets were paid for. I basically like went there for free, which is also hilarious. And Marty rents a restaurant out one night. We go there, we get absolutely shit-faced. Marty's excited. His family's obviously thrilled. It's like the best thing. You got a bunch of beauties there. We go back to the hotel. We have a hot stove in the room till like 6 in the morning. We get up the next day.
That's what I missed.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
That's what I missed.
Marty had like the best guys there too. Like, so he had a bunch of guys from his 04 Cup team, obviously. Vinny was there. I mean, this guy doesn't even get old either. He looks great. He's tan. He's jacked. I'm like, you dickhead. I know. I tried to. He actually put me down in the hot stove at 7 a.m. He said I went over the edge. I was being too mean to him. He took me down in the Marty suite. I loved it. Oh my God. So Marty actually, he's allowed to like invite as many people as he wants, or you made the cut. And this makes me want to be so bad. What are the chances I get a look from Sid?
I mean, I think you're there. You're the glue guy, Whit. You're like me. It's like me and Bugsy. Like I don't know why the hell we got invited, but I was like, all right, you're going to invite me? You give me an inch. I'm going to take fucking 6 miles. Let's go. Never be back again. And it was great just because it was sad, but it was so awesome. I don't know if you guys saw the speech and Marty like thanked his mom. So the last time we saw all Marty's family and friends, it was when his mom passed away at the funeral. So to see his dad, Norman, he was dancing. He had the finger snaps going. His elbows were going crazy on the dance floor. He was loving it. His family and friends were there. So everyone was so happy. So it was just really nice to see everyone in such a good mood and celebrate, you know, obviously the career that everyone knows how good he was and what an impact he had for everyone.
Teddy, did Marty not know that the current Tampa Bay Lightning were going to be there? Was that a surprise to him?
I don't think it was a surprise. They were talking. So it was also awesome of Mr. Vinnick too. The boys flew from Tampa to Buffalo, and all the dorks that weren't invited, they had to get off in Buffalo and go to Chippewa Street and eat wings all afternoon. And the guys that like play with Marty flew to Toronto, went to Harbor 60, had a free meal, went to the event, and then bus back to Buffalo the next night. So Marty was like super happy to see those guys. And obviously it was cool that they went out of their way to do that. I mean, obviously it was a no brainer, but it was just, it was super cool to see all the support that Marty had.
Hey, I don't want to be a Buzz Killington here. Did Stevie Y end up going?
No, he didn't. That was the first thing I asked, too. And then it was like we were kind of laughing, too. I guess John Cooper went, and Marty talked about all his coaches, and Cooper was, like, sitting at the stage, like, you know, the puppy dog, like, with his head tilted, like, oh. And Marty didn't say his name. We were dying laughing.
Oh, did he forget, or was it an accident? Like, was Coops pissed?
I definitely don't think it was an accident. Like, accidentally on purpose, maybe?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, they were, yeah, I mean, I respect it. Dude, remember Jordan's Hall of Fame speech, for Christ's sake?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he wasn't there that long with them. It was just kind of funny. I was like, ooh, I was in the crowd, like, kind of, like, pulling my suit collar, like, ooh, whoopsies.
Hey,
Teddy.
What?
Oh, sorry, Biz. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to ask what the funniest thing Bugsy Malone did all week.
I don't know. Me and Bugsy, we got into it all weekend. We went watch football on Sunday. Saturday, we had that. He rented out this restaurant with all of his family. We go back at 6. Next day, we show up again. Then after the Hall of Fame, it was actually one of the coolest things ever. Was Marty had a great crew from when he won, like Brad Richards, Vinny, Freddie Modine, Tim Taylor, Andrew Chuck,
And me, Bugsy, obviously stayed after. I mean, if we're going to have a hot stove, I'm not missing that. And, you know, Marty was watching it. He was obviously nervous, and he was happy after, and we were having beers. He was, like, had his Hall of Fame jacket on. He was all jacked up, too, that he got a suit made for it, and he was like, this is the first time in my life the suit was too short for me. I had to get the legs, like, longer. And he's like, can you believe it? Can you believe? And then Marty saw it on TV for the first time, like, after it was obviously we're in Canada, so it was all over TSN or whatever, Sportsnet. And just to see him, like, watch himself on TV, like, we were all, I mean, it's 4 a.m, but it was pretty cool to see. I was just pretty, like, honored and humble just for him to even think about me and invite me to such a big event.
Teddy, we always used to laugh on the golf trip. We'd be like, look at these guys we're hanging out with. Zetterberg over there, Madonna over there. So I can't imagine when you were walking around the Hall of Fame speech night, Larry Robinson, Scott Niedermayer, just like left and right, just seeing Hall of Famers. Lanny McDonald, were you get any stories or any chats with any of the legends?
Yeah, like, so the first night we get there, I check into the hotel and everyone's just kind of hanging out at the lobby. And obviously Toronto's a good city, but you're there for when you're a good friend's Hall of Fame thing. So you just want to try to soak up as much as you can. So I'm not like going out to the bar, like with my friends that I have there or whatever. And come in, like met Marty Brodeur through the Team Canada, a little bit of the Olympic stuff leading up the Olympics last year. He was like assistant GM. He comes up, he's like, hey, Teddy, what's up? I'm like rubbing shoulders with these guys. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, I'm the biggest pigeon ever. Lanny McDonald comes over and he's like talking to the boys. He's just crushing red wine. He's got red wine all in his white duster. I was dying laughing. I like wanted to send a picture to my dad, but I didn't. And, you know, and then the same thing, like, so what happens at the Hall of Fame thing is like, I was putting it on my Instagram too. And like, this, it's funny, like some fans in like LA or wherever, they're obviously not that good of fans or thought I was cool, but didn't realize how much I suck. So I was like putting it on my Instagram, like, and I also have, I have fucking 8 followers too, which is even funnier, but I'm putting it on there like, oh, it's such an honor to go in the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm right at home. Thanks for having me. And they're like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, congrats on such a big night. And I was like, Jesus Christ. So we go there and they have a bar all over the place. So the guys are just mingling. It's great. You see like old coaches. You had like, I saw Stumpy Thomas. I'm talking to him. He's an awesome dude. And Sean Burke, you know, the other GMs are there, other players you played against. So you're just kind of like catching up and talking to guys. Then I happen to be downstairs and I'm like, Marty, after the Hall of Fame, they all go down and like sign this book. It's like when you get married, you sign the official paper or you're going to the hall. So everyone else went up to like this private room where all like the guys' pictures of their heads are like actually in the Hall of Fame room, but they turned that into a bar. So it's like a party for like just the guys that are inducted in their close family. So I was like downstairs mingling and like the security guard had to come find me because I couldn't get up there and no one let me in. So I was like, obviously the pigeon that I was, but I was like downstairs, open bar. I'm fucking mingling. I'm having a great time. I'm like, I don't want this night to end. So then all of a sudden, like the bagpipes come on and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? So I'm trying to get upstairs. And all of a sudden, it's every NHLer Hall of Famer that's there. So Dominic Hasek, Pat LaFontaine, Dave Anderchuk, Marty, Gretzky, Paul Coffey, Adam Oates, Cam Neely, and I'm like Luke Robitaille. I'm like, oh, hey, boys, like, what's going on? Get the fuck out of here. Like,
oh, my God, that's quite the list.
No, I know. That's, it was unbelievable. It was really cool to see. Like, I can't imagine how like exciting it was for the guys that are actually going in the hall, but even just for the fans and a fan like me, too, that actually played against some of these guys, I was like, wow, this is actually really fucking cool to witness this.
Hey, did you get to have a conversation with Hasek?
I didn't. I said hi to him, and I think he, like, walked the other way. Hey, Dominic. Oh, hey, Peter.
He's like, yeah, I'll take another glass of Camus, sir. You're like, oh, okay, I'll go get it. Be right back.
I know. I looked like an Uber driver. It was a black tie event. I had a dark suit. They're like, no, I didn't call an Uber.
Well, that's why they didn't trust you.
I know.
Wearing a wire.
Yeah.
So, Teddy, so give us a little bit more of how things are going. You're working with Adam Oates, who I think people loved his interview. Thank you for helping us set that up. But how's everything going with you?
Everything's good, man. I actually came home to Newfoundland after Marty's thing. I haven't been home in a year and a half. OT like gave me 10 minutes off of not talking hockey, so it was nice of him. But that was actually pretty cool, too. I didn't really know what I was going to do this summer after coming back from the nightmare in Russia. And he was out in L.A. training Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. And he came to me and he was like, hey, man, I know you kind of you had me as a coach and you work. I worked for you when you were playing. How do you feel about working for me? I was like, I don't really know what I think about it, but, you know, let me see. And it's awesome because he's a great dude. We get along so well. He's hilarious, as you guys know. He's, like, witty and that dry sense of humor. Obviously, his hockey IQ is off the chart. So I still learn a lot. I actually feel like I'm a better player and know more about hockey now that I'm done and making no money than when I actually played. So I'm actually a little sour about that. But it's cool to still talk to the guys and be around it and still watch. And you're involved a little bit. And we travel to some good cities and we see the guys. So I think it's a really good balance for me right now.
Teddy, we saw he signed, basically a contract with the Kings a couple weeks ago. But the press release didn't really offer a lot of details. Now, how is that still going to work? Where if he's working with the Kings, is he still going to be allowed to work with players on other teams? Or did the Kings make him put some sort of language in the contract? Do you know anything about that? Or would you rather not say?
No, he's open about it, too. And there's no big secret behind it. Is he's an independent contractor now. So it's not like he's going in and telling systems and talking about other players with who he's working with to the Kings. I think they want some help on the power play and some offensive zone, you know, kind of just a different voice, a different hockey mind. And from you guys talking to him and everyone knows his career, he's got some pretty good ideas that work for him. And so I think for now it's a good balance for him where he can, you know, help them out and still work with his players on the side. So it's a good fit so far.
Teddy, I want to ask you this. How thankful are you for this job? Because it kind of, I wouldn't say it came out of nowhere, but like when you retire, man, it's difficult. You sometimes you just find yourself in a rut.
No, for sure. And the last time I talked to you guys, I was obviously so happy to come back for Russia. I really didn't give a shit. I would have shoveled shit for a year. Like I was that happy. I was just smiling and didn't care about anything. But like you said, it does set in, like reality sets in. You're like, okay, what am I going to do now? And it did. It kind of fell in my lap. And then the Kings approached me too. I'm just doing some like TV stuff. Like I'm going to do like 15 episodes this year with some of the guys. So it's good that I think when you're a player and Witt and Biz, both of you guys know this, that when you're a good guy and you don't burn bridges, yeah, coaches hated us because we all sucked and we fooled the league and made more money than we should have. That people, like, if you're a good guy, people will come back to you and circle back, and they want to work with guys that are kind of fun to be around and good dudes. So I think that was kind of the situation there, and it's keeping me busy. And instead of drinking 15 times a week, now I just drink 7, so it's perfect.
who's been your funnest player to work with so far in your new role?
I think that's a tough question because I like talk to all the guys too a little bit and
Project, like where you think that you can really help this person.
Oh yeah, that'll really help the guys.
That'll go over well.
That's like winning the most improved. Hey, you suck, but you still suck. We're getting a little bit better.
Okay, so can we just agree on a question?
I worked out with Mark Scheifele in Toronto years back, and I always knew he was a good player. I didn't realize he was going to be he's arguably like a top 10 player, would you guys say?
Yeah,
I'd say top 20 for sure.
Yeah, whatever the number is, but just to see how dedicated he is and how much he loves like learning from OT and how like fired up he gets. I know. I've just been impressed by that. So I would say Scheife. Give Scheife. He needs a little confidence. So I'm trying to help him. He's got kind of bad haircuts and his style's like getting a little better. So I'd like to give Scheife a little chiclet bump.
Hey, Witt, I actually got to spend some time with him. He's a fucking great kid. He's got a good personality. I would consider him in like the hockey nerd category where he ain't going out every night having beers with the boys. But nonetheless, like just a great personality. And does he not have a a nutritionist where he's broken it down, where he knows exactly what he needs to eat at each time of the day and exactly what is going to help his body succeed and what his, like, his body would be allergic to? Or is it that intense?
Yeah. I mean, I think Winnipeg too, like, the restaurants are limited. So, like, I was up there before their training camp, and like, Wheels has like a chef who went over there. The meal was unbelievable. So I think Scheif got on that board too with like getting a chef, and just, I know when you're so rich too, like, you have a chef around, you're going to eat well. You don't have to go out and deal with the cold and fans if you play bad, like all that bullshit. So it's just like convenient and easy for them. And then I think, you know, he's a little bit on the, obviously with the Tom Brady coming out with all that stuff too, he was just kind of interested in it. So I think he went out and got, I don't think he's as crazy as Brady, but he's just kind of seeing what he responds to well. And obviously his body feels good. He's, knocked on wood, he's been pretty healthy the last few years. Obviously he's been a stud in the game and a difference maker every game. So got to tip your cap, like, whatever he's doing is working, might as well stick with it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Teddy, before we let you go, did you end up getting all the money you were owed from Russia?
No, I didn't. I didn't get $100,000. And
unbelievable.
I know. And then now they're talking about, like, so they say they pay for your gear. I'm like, okay. I went over there with, like, skates that I had in L.A. and in the minors my last year pro, and I was just, like, sulking around. I was like, I'm not even a good skater anyways. My ankles are so weak, and like, these skates were like paper bags. And then I was using like old sticks that were like 4 months old, but I didn't care. I'm like, I'm in Russia, who gives a shit? And so we had in the play, I was there for four months, and right before the playoffs, I get a new pair of skates and like 34 sticks. I'm like, and I left all my gear there anyways. And the guy was like, oh yeah, you owe me $8,000, like, and they said they were going to pay for my parents' flight that was in the contract and my flights back and forth. So that's probably another $20,000. Sort of fleecing me, but fuck those guys.
Well, Teddy, before we let you go, is there anything else you want to talk about that you were expecting us to ask you?
Oh, that was good. I mean, Marty might be a little sad. Bad. I mean, like I said, we stayed up till 7 watching, talking about hockey and life, but man, it was good to see him smile so much, and those guys must have had so much fun when they won the cup, and just to, you know, see Vinny and obviously set the tone, Bugsy Malone, was really cool. I'm just thankful that Marty, like I said earlier, thought about me and to invite him. You know, we did play together for 5 years, but I didn't make him better in his career. Obviously Vinny, Richie, Stammer, these guys, but for him to think of me, that he obviously thinks of me as an okay guy, so that was something I'll always remember. It's almost like your first NHL goal. I'm like, at the Hall of Fame, like, this is fucking awesome.
Hey, last question. Was Bugsy Malone still scooping ice at a guy's drinks?
Yeah, he was.
I already asked that.
I know. It's so stupid, too. It's like, you're talking to someone, like, I'm talking to Dave Anderchuk, or you're talking to a Hall of Famer, and Bugsy, like, dips his hand in your drink when you're not looking and giggles. It's like, ooh, no ice, you got a chug. Like, who comes up with that rule? That's like borderline, like, serial killer shit.
Yeah. Excuse me, Mr. Anderchuk. I got to chug this.
Hey, all of a sudden, he's like, hey, Gary, chug it down. Come on, Pepin. There ain't no ice left in that drink. Hey, do you see that? I got Gary.
No, Gary's at the Hall of Fame. He had a pair of Skechers on, too. It's kind of hard to see.
What?
Come on. Oh, dude. All right, buddy. You're the best, man. We're gonna hopefully, if you will, come back on in you know, a month or two. We'd love catching up with you.
Hey, boy. Thanks for having me. Love listening. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, Teddy.
Love you, Teddy. Bye-bye.
That interview was also brought to you by Mugsy Jeans. If you're a hockey guy or an athlete, you've struggled to find clothes that fit you well. Let's face it. Most men's clothes aren't designed for guys with bigger thighs or a bigger ass, especially when it comes to jeans. I know I hate putting my jeans on with my awkward fitting body, and there's nothing worse than when your jeans feel like they're choking out your balls and legs. Not good. Well, I have good news, guys. Mugsy jeans are designed specifically for dudes like us. They're made from high-tech materials like synthetic silk and a bunch of other technical stuff we won't bore you with or waste your time with. But listen, I have a pair of Mugsy jeans. I tweeted them out last week. They're fantastic. Probably the most comfortable jeans I've ever worn. They're nice and stretchy. They contour to your body. super comfy, man. I honestly, you could wear these to the gym. You look like a donkey. You could do yoga in them. They make basic things like sitting or squatting feel like a dream. Like usually when I get in legit, just take the jeans off. Muggsies, I can fall asleep in them. They're that comfortable. Take my word. You won't be able to go back to normal jeans after wearing Muggsies. There's a reason Men's Health called Muggsy Jeans the best jeans for athletes and podcast hosts. For those who think it sounds too good to be true, no worries. The guys at Muggsy are so confident you'll love the jeans. They have totally free shipping and returns, so you get nothing to lose by giving them a try. I'm telling you, they're super comfy. I need another pair, as a matter of fact. And Muggsy has a full lineup of awesome styles that won't let you down, including safe-for-work chinos. Do your legs a favor and check out the jeans that are sweeping the Stooley Nation by heading to MuggsyJeans.com. That's MuggsyJeans.com and use the promo code SPIT for $10 off. That's a beer on us and a pair of the most comfortable jeans ever made by heading to MuggsyJeans.com with the promo code SPIT. Big thanks again to our buddy Teddy Purcell, another appearance on the show. So he's officially a recurring guest. He's always a fun time. Yeah, we mentioned the trade that happened Wednesday. To me, it kind of reeks of I want to wake my fucking team up trade. GM Jim Rutherford sent Carl Hagelin to L.A. for Tanner Pearson. Not a blockbuster of a trade, but certainly two guys who've been struggling this year, both getting a change of scenery. Let's see. Hagelin is a pending UFA, so if the Kings don't manage to become a contender for the rest of the season, he could potentially be on the move again. He's 30 years old. He's in his eighth season. He's a $4 million cap hit. He's been a struggle so far this season. One goal, two assists. He did win the two cups with Pittsburgh in 16 and 17. Tanner Pearson, Pittsburgh's getting a guy 4 years younger. He's only 26. He's in the second year of a pretty team-friendly four-year, $15 million deal, $375 million average hit. But he only has one assist thus far. He also won a cup as a rookie back in 14. Again, guys, I think this is two guys who are struggling. I think the Penguins, maybe Rutherford is just trying to tell his locker room, hey, you know, you guys got to wake up or somebody else could be next. What's your take, Witz?
Yeah, that's a pretty good analysis by you.
Thank you.
Listen, this is something where sometimes both teams need a change and players need a change. So Tanner Pearson, Biz, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about him because you were in LA's organization. He was awesome when he won the Stanley Cup. I mean, he was fly. He played with I feel like he played with Jeff Carter a lot, and he has good wheels. He could score. He wasn't soft player at all. He seemed hard to play against. I was shocked when I saw these zero goals, one assist right now. And then same with Hagelin. He's had a slow start. He had a good run. He was a big part of those championship teams. But all right, let's similar salaries. Let's do a swap here. Pittsburgh kept $250K, I think, annually or this year to make it an even cap hit for LA because Hagelin's making a little bit more money. But Pearson's also signed, I think, for two more years after this one. I believe that's the number. So he all of a sudden goes over. Imagine he gets a chance with Crosby or Malkin. I could see him, first of all, hearing the news he's getting traded. It's always shocking the first time, so he's probably a little upset. He's got some amazing memories being a King. But then right after that, holy shit, have you ever heard of Ryan Whitney? That guy made $24 million playing with Crosby. What am I going to do with a chance of playing with this guy? This is incredible. And he's probably fired up right now. And even if it's Malkin, I could see him really stepping up and having some big games and a rest of a big season for Pittsburgh. And I also like Hagelin's game. He's quick and he makes the Kings a lot faster than they are. Although Pearson's not slow either. So we'll see.
Yeah, Whit, great points. I look at this one on a bigger scale than, let's say, a Max Domi for Galchenyuk trade for the simple fact that I'm shocked at the lack of offensive output through these two guys. Quick note, R.A., Pittsburgh will be eating $250,000 of Hagelin's salary to even it off at 3.75, which is Pearson's salary for this year, next year, and next year after that. Whit, you mentioned that he's signed for two more years. Classic case of both these guys need a change of scenery. Let's see if it works out.
Yep.
I don't mind the gamble by Pittsburgh at all. It's interesting because I don't think anyone heard anything of this before today. And then, yesterday, Wednesday is when we're recording. But, I think it's going to be good. And I think it's going to wake Pearson up for sure. As far as LA, it looks like they're kind of headed towards a little bit of a rebuild, just trying to dish some salary. People are commenting that it is to open up some cap space in order to re-sign Drew Doughty. So who knows? I wish them both the best. And you mentioned it, man. A lot of memories for Pearson and Hagelin in both of their respective cities.
Also, boys, we also should mention Jim Rutherford signed, I believe, a 3-year extension with the Penguins. But he's not happy right now. He had made some comments out in the public in the media about, you know, he's not happy with the way they're playing and not happy how the season's going. So to make a trade, that's the first step, trying to get the guys going, because it's surprising to see. I mean, Jersey wasn't playing well at all, and Pittsburgh got dominated by them. Or not dominated, but they lost to Jersey. Halsey, 4 points. Shout out to that beast. Bum. So Pittsburgh's got to figure it out a little bit.
I'll tell you, if I'm an LA Kings fan, Biz, I'm asking, why did they make this deal? Like, you know, did they make the team better for now or for the future? I mean, you did reference it could eventually be a salary dump because Hagelin's money is going to come off the books. That's if they even keep him for the rest of the year. But if I'm a Kings fan, man, I'm fucking scratching my head right now. And which, yeah, you mentioned Rutherford. He signed through 2022. And one other note regarding the Penguins, Sid did miss practice yesterday on Wednesday. They said upper body. Hopefully it's nothing long term, because, you know, we want to have one of the best players in the game constantly playing.
We didn't talk about this too. I love the Pens organization. I love the city. Their Twitter and social media, though, with the fans is absolutely fucking banana lands. I would put it up there with probably Vancouver as far as the crazies. They are ruthless. Jim Rutherford brought them 2 Stanley Cups back-to-back. Now, because they've had a slow start, and every time they've had issues, he's went out and addressed it, and for the most part been very successful with it. And I've been reading on Twitter today that they want his head on a platter, and I'm thinking, but they still got, I would say, a solid 3 to 4 year window with, of course, the core pieces they have in place. Let him shake it up a little bit, as he's done in the past and had success. When things don't go right, then you can judge him. Last year, Christ, they ran into a hot Washington team. Finally, they ended up losing to him. Of course, Penguins Twitter reacts like maniacs. Let's see what they can do in the next three years. You know, Rutherford has a pretty good resume. He's done a lot for that organization. Chill the fuck out.
Also, Biz, we gotta remember we're our podcast is popular in Pittsburgh. The Yinzers are Spit and Chicklets fans, and I think that Twitter is it's fake world. It's a small fake reality people live in. So most of the Penguins fans, I think you ask them, and they are very happy with Jim Rutherford, and they have trust in him. We just hear this weird culture creepo Twitter group that we sometimes think is like real life.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, my bad. So just maybe erase everything I just said, Grinnell.
I compare Pens fans to like Patriots fans' wits. Like they almost fucking take for granted what they have. They've got titles. They got a contender every year, and they still want to bitch about shit. There's definitely some similarities there.
I will say to back up Biz's point here. I mean, we out of all the feedback we get on social media, out of all the negative feedback we get on social media, a lot of it's from Pittsburgh fans.
Yeah, they're spoiled, buddy. They don't know they got it. Good.
Do they not remember me snapping it tape to tape for a couple seasons there?
You think the dark times are behind them, but I guess not. And boys, let's not forget maybe why this trade happened. Of course, the struggles offensively and Pittsburgh not doing well. But let's talk about this Metropolitan Division in general. Holy shit. Who the fuck would have guessed where it would be? Almost a quarter into the season with the 1, 2, and 3. We got Columbus leading the way. We got the Islanders in second and the Rangers in third place in that division. Of course, it's still early. Of course, that's going to get shooken up. But I mean, you guys want to start it at the top with Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, Columbus was a playoff team last year. I think because they didn't have a good showing last year, people might not be taking them too serious, but it's no surprise they're doing what they're doing. They got a pretty good squad there. But the Islanders, man, I think everybody wrote them off. Frankie Borelli was practically hanging off the fucking Verrazano Bridge when Tavares left for Toronto. But I think we've seen this before with teams. They lose a guy, and it kind of galvanizes a team. They rally against it. And again, Biz, like you said, it is early, but this division looks upside down right now. I mean, it's not doing what we expected it to do. The Devils, I get the kind of they started off a little hotter. They've been struggling a bit as of late. But, yeah, you know, Jersey, you're reading it backwards. Jersey, Pittsburgh's in second to last place. Carolina started hot. They've cooled off. I think it's also important to know, too, how close these teams are. I mean, all these a team in fucking sixth place is only 4 points behind, like, the first place team. So, you know, a quick streak of winning or losing can easily flip the division quick. But it's early. I think, you know, things might level off at some point. But the Capitals, too, they look like they may have a little bit of a championship hangover. You think about that, Biz?
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to hear Witt's thoughts on the top three right now.
Yeah, all right, not to call you out, even though I love doing it. Columbus, they lost in the first round, but they were up 2-0 and went to double overtime, a game three against Washington. So I know you're probably right that not getting to the second round is considered a failure, but they played Washington as hard as anyone else in the playoffs did. So you knew coming into this year that they'd be a team that would be dangerous, especially with Panera, and he's so nasty, and I don't know if he's going to re-sign there. It sucks if you're a Blue Jackets fan right now. But then you look at the Islanders team. I was wrong about all of them, shocker. But I can't – the Islanders, this goes to show Barry Trotz is a good coach, man. He obviously – everywhere he's been, he's had good teams, whether it was Nashville, the Capitals, or right now the way that the Islanders are playing. Thomas Greiss has been phenomenal. But the forwards up front, I mean, they lost one of the top players in the league, and everyone said they'd be shit. Maybe they use that as a little bit of a rallying cry. Sometimes I think that's a little overrated in pro sports, but you never know. And they've looked awesome. And now they're going to start playing a few games back at the Nassau Coliseum. That place is going to be rocking. The atmosphere has always been just shit in Brooklyn. So, and then the Rangers. Shout out to David Quinn, Man Rocket, hottest coach in the league. Thank you very much. Obviously went to BU. Went to BU, former coach at BU. And the Rangers had a tough start. They did not look good. Some weird healthy scratches going on there of some veteran players, and they've turned things around. Lundqvist, father time, he's just still kicking with the best of them, and so that team's really flying. And also our boy Kevin Hayes has looked great lately. Shout out to our boy. Actually, I feel like one of our most favorite guests by the people who listen. I think they love listening to Hazy, especially when he's with KY. So good for all these teams. It's very surprising to see. I think Washington getting Tom Wilson back is a huge addition for them. He plays on that first line. He's a motherfucker out there. He's faster than people think. So, and he's not going to change the way he's playing. He's got to stop with the hits, but they'll pick it up. But it's definitely great to see the parity. I think it's a good thing for the league. I'm wondering if you agree with me or not on that, Biz.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to start at the top. I'm going to come back to Columbus, but you touched on the Islanders. I might get smothered for this comment, but I feel like they're this year's Las Vegas Golden Knights, and I'm going to tell you why. They got Trotz, much like Gallant, a coach very well respected, very well liked by his team. He gets in there, new system. They've tightened things up a lot defensively compared to last year because we knew they had some offensive weapons because they were getting it done offensively. Their goaltender's been unbelievable. I'll let R.A. Take the goaltending stats right now. If you got Thomas Greiss, if you can pull him up when I'm finished here. But I just feel like the team in general has that us against the world mentality. They're like the NHL outcasts, much like Las Vegas was coming into last year. They lose Tavares. You know, Eberle wasn't wanted in Edmonton, goes to New York, has success there. He's had a good start to the season again. Filppula, who kind of got moved around a little bit after Tampa Bay. Andrew Ladd, who everyone criticized for getting a ridiculous contract, he's been solid for them. Leo Komarov, who people thought in Toronto was done. He goes over to the island. He's been solid for them as well. I mean, Matt Martin, he's only played 11 games. He came over from the Leafs as well. He's had three big goals for them. And another thing I want to mention is I'm still waiting for Matt Barzal to pop off even a little bit more. He's second on their team in scoring right now. It is difficult for a guy like that in his second year. All of a sudden, the big boy Tavares has gone to Toronto. Now he's got those first-line matchups, which makes it more difficult on him facing better defensemen on a nightly basis. Currently, right now, too, his shooting percentage is at 7.1%, which is bound to even out. Last year, he finished at 12.1%. I know he's not known for his goal scoring. He's more of a setup guy. guy. Currently only 2 goals this year. I believe that that's going to scale up. 14 assists, of course. Did you have those goalie numbers for Grice? Because he's been lights out, RA.
Got him right here, brother. He started 8 games so far, 5-2-1 record with a 1.98 goals against and a 0.938 save percentage with 1 shutout. He's a guy who was, you know, a bit of a, no, I wouldn't say, you know, journeyman backup. He was with a few different teams. He never really got an opportunity to start. He got that in the Islanders, and it looks like he might be a number one in hiding, who's been, you know, kind of never really got a good shot at. He was always backing guys up, but if he can maintain this pace, then the fucking sky might be the limit for the Isles this year.
Absolutely. And then moving on to Columbus, of course, who are leading the division right now. I guess the reason I'm so surprised they're in the position right now is because Bobrovsky had a horrendous start to the season. He's finally caught stride. In his last 5 games, he's only allowed more than 1 goal in 1 of the 5 starts. In all those other games, he's only allowed 1 goal, which is remarkable. So obviously with him catching stride, the obvious Panarin, we talked about him last week. He's fucking filthy. One of the most ridiculous trades in recent memory. Currently that Columbus team has 11 players with 9 or more points. Panarin, of course, leading the way. And then their 1-2 punch on the back end of Seth Jones and Werenski. Seth Jones has only played 11 games too. He missed 7 to start the year with injury, but he's already got 9 points. Werenski's got 11. So ultimately they have everyone pulling the rope there. They're coached well. So, I guess not as big a surprise as everyone thought, but that metropolitan division in general. And then, of course, in third right now is New York, who everyone thought was going to go through a rebuild, but they've been very impressive.
Good.
Go ahead. Yep.
Let's not forget, I'm going to bring his name up every time we hear it throughout the podcast, Zach Werenski-Grinnelli. I think he slept through one of the interviews he said he'd give us back when we were little logs, spitting chicklets, just these little mice that Grinnelli were afraid of on RA's couch. He probably had a couple living in there himself when we mom and pop shop podcast. Werenski said, yeah, I'll come on, and just slept right through it.
So he's never answered.
You owe us. You owe us. You know, now people are going to be texting you. Did you hear about Witt? He called you out. You slept through his podcast. They didn't appreciate it. So, Werenski, please, please, come on, help the fellas out here.
Yeah, and bring Seth Jones while you're at it. So now we're going to be bullying guys into interviews. And speaking of interviews, we have Brent Sopel, who was very candid. We heard of some funny stories. We heard, of course, another Babcock story. Ugh, geez, this guy's just getting torched on our pod. So let's throw it off to Brent Sopel. We hope you guys enjoy the interview.
This interview is brought to you by SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a simple way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're catching your favorite musician on tour, shopping for the perfect gift, or searching for a last-minute deal to see your favorite NHL team, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Nothing beats being there in person for the biggest plays of the year, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for great value. I've had the SeatGeek app on my phone for a long time, and it's by far the easiest way I've had to shop for tickets. You can be anywhere, a couple taps, boom, you find your seats. I just use them again get my nephew tickets again. Kid's going to bankrupt me with all the tickets and buying them. But boom, you go on, punch a couple buttons in, tells you where the seats are. They line up the seats according to the price, whatever is in your budget. You can shop for this one, shop for that one. Saves you time and money by searching all the sites, so you don't have to do that. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets with the full utmost confidence and not worry about some dirtbag running out down behind the garden with all your money because you gave it to some greasy scalper. Doesn't happen like that. Every ticket is graded based on a budget again, so it fits your budget. You don't want to spend too much, you don't have to. So make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code HOCKEY today. That's promo code HOCKEY for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, right seat, right now, right from your phone.
I am very excited to welcome to the Spit and Chicklets podcast a guy that I've never met in person, but heard a lot of great things about. He has some wonderful stories to talk about for his NHL career, his junior career, and of course, some Russian gas stories from his time in the KHL. He's went through some difficulty in his life, a very open guy, and he's going to talk about it. We're going to welcome to the Spit and Chicklets podcast, Brent Sopel, 659 NHL games, drafted in the sixth round of the 1995 NHL entry draft by the Vancouver Canucks. What a city. Welcome to the podcast, buddy.
No, I appreciate that. Just let me know where to send that check for, you know, for that intro.
I'll send you a Venmo request for some dough.
Yeah, perfect.
Well, he tried adding 100 games. He tried adding 100 games. He was looking for a little extra cash.
Yeah, you know, he knows how it is. You know, can't blame a smart man.
Thank you. So, hey, let's start at the beginning. You were a Western League guy, so obviously you've probably fucking, you know, crushing guys, throwing both hands.
Seeing girls strip, riding along your bus, the old junior show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Rookie parties. I mean, rookies in the bed, naked, in the bus of, you know, the seven-hour bus ride, and see who comes out with the clothes on.
Well, I mean, you started in Saskatoon, and, I mean, were you drafted there in junior?
No, I was from, you know, I was from Saskatoon, and, you know, they saw me, and they're like, oh, I'm, you know, I might take a shot at this guy. He can't skate. You know, he's the slowest guy in the league, but, as I think I was playing midget triple A, so they brought me up a few times. I ended up getting lucky sticking there, and then I got traded off to Speedy Creek, the home of you know, Graham James, you know, the pedophile that needs to be put behind bars for, you know, for life.
Yeah, oh wow, so guy. Yeah, fuck him for real. So yeah. So you got discovered and kind of walked on with Saskatoon with the Blades and played there a little bit in 93-94, a little bit more 94-95, and then in 94-95 you said traded to Swift Current where you pretty much finished the rest of that season.
Yeah, correct. You know, just it was 2.5 hours down the road in beautiful God's country in Saskatchewan, as we like to call it. You know, as a young kid, getting traded from home, you know, got a little homesick early, but, you know, found the ropes, found the local bars, found the local high school girls. So, you know, I was all set pretty quick.
Nice. So, let's see, you get drafted 95. Now, you said you were a terrible skater. What kind of things did you have to work on, Brent, to, like, improve your game that you were able to go from barely playing to getting drafted in the sixth round of the NHL?
You know, honestly, you know, my skating was always, you know, you can ask both these guys, Biz and Whit, you know, I was rated probably the slowest, you know, I was never the strongest skater. So that was, you know, that was a big thing. I came in the league offensive defenseman, back in the day, thank God, you know, we had the hang on, we had the water skiing, you know, we could hook anybody. So, you know, I came in the right time where I was doing a heck of a lot of that, but, you know, it was, I got lucky, had some skill, but it was more of a, had more of a work ethic than anything.
Yeah, I mean, back then, the you know, skating wasn't really the focus. They were more concerned on whether the guy was over 6 feet and he could fight a little bit. That was more important than the skating aspect.
Oh, yeah, you know, in the Western League, you know, you had to have at least 9 tough guys on, you know, on each team. There's at least, you know, 1 bench clearing brawl a year and at least a, you know, line brawl every other game. So, you had to be tough, and you know, skill and skating wasn't really too much of a concern.
So we talked about this a few podcasts ago. Were you still in the WHL when they made the teams warm up separately?
Yeah, that's when I was. I was, you know, in the WHL at that point in time. You know, we'd be out there. I think it's like 45 minutes before we have the full ice. There's 20 of us whipping around like idiots on this full ice. You know, when you're the visiting team, then finally, you know, they woke up and did the half ice, you know, halfway through my WHL career.
So Brent, you spent some time in the minors, right? I mean, you're grinding it out in the Always Hungry League, as we call it. Was there a moment when you're thinking, I don't know if I'm going to make it as a regular NHLer, or the whole time were you thinking, I'll get there at some point? What's kind of the mindset as you're playing 2, 3, 4 years in the minors?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask that because, you know, I never thought I, you know, would ever make it up. I think that it was my third or fourth training camp. I'm in Ottawa. And, you know, we play an exhibition game, and Mark Crawford is the coach at this point in time. You know, he pulls me in. He's like, you know what, Soaps, You know, we're sending it down, you know, you're a pussy, you don't fight, you don't hit, you don't skate, you don't pass, you don't shit. Yeah, I swear to God. And he's like, you're a pussy, you do fucking nothing out here. So we're sending you to the minors.
No shit. Coaches are so fucking ruthless. Like,
yeah, he says you're terrible. You do nothing. You don't shoot hard. You don't skate hard. You don't pass hard. You do absolutely nothing. You have no hope of an NHL career. So, you know, you're heading off to the minors. And see you later.
Said no hope. No joke. Don't even.
No joke.
Wow.
And so, you know, at that point in time, I'm like, huh. You know, I guess I'm going to go to Syracuse. I'm going to have a career, be a career minor leader. And, you know, that was it. So I thought, you know, NHL was no hope after that meeting.
What year was that? Because, I mean, you had a pretty decent year in 97, 98 offensively with 10 goals, 33 assists for 43 points in Syracuse, where you spent most of your time in the AHL.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was the next year. It was that same year I got sent down. I got called back up, you know, in February. I end up, you know, I think it was a 10-game point streak, and things were going well. And it was right around Valentine's Day. I got a call back saying, you know, coach calls me and said, you're going up. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, is it April Fool's? I already know Crow hates me. So, you know, ha ha ha, where's the joke? Where are the cameras? And all, like, you know, he's like, seriously, you've been playing well. So I went up to Vancouver. And I never came back.
So when you showed up, were you like, hey, Crow, is like this cool? Do you know about this?
Yeah, you know, I'm like, you know, Crow, you know, you and I are best friends. We end up, you know, Crow and I have probably the biggest love-hate relationship. We had more fuck you matches in the dressing room and on the bench than I've ever heard. You know, he came after me all the time.
Is it true? I was always told Mark Crawford would go up and down the bench and just kick guys, kick them right in the back.
Kick me. He choked me. He grabbed the back of my jersey and just neck, you know, pull you back. So, you know, oh yeah, he attacked guys personally. You know, he came up 1 year, you know, after the season. He's like, so, you know, you need to work hard. You know, you need to gain, you know, 15, 20 pounds. So, you know, left there, went right home, hit the diet, hit the weights. You know, put on 20 pounds of muscle, and I come back here, and he's yelling at the bench, what are you fucking Hercules now? Are you turning green? Are you Hulk? Just screaming at me. Suspended me for, I think it was like 6 weeks. Wouldn't let me play. Only practice. Bag skated me, and I had to step on a scale every single day to see what my weight lost before he'd let me play.
Oh, geez. I've heard numerous stories about him playing mind games with guys. Like, so all in all, though, like, if you saw him now, would you talk to him? Would you have a normal conversation, or you kind of hate his guts?
No, you know what? Some of the things he said, yeah, you know, fuck you. But, you know, for whatever reason, he kept putting me out there. And, you know, I probably played, you know, almost probably close to 500 games in my career, or it was with him, you know, for him, I should say. So, as much as I hated him, and, you know, for whatever, he had something that he liked me. So back to the love-hate relationship, you know, I'd definitely say I had him and say, you know, you're an asshole sometimes, for sure.
Did any guys ever take a poke at him? I mean, sitting there and they're kicking him and choking him and getting in their faces. Did any guys ever lose their shit and try to take a swing at him?
You know, nobody took a swing at him, but there's a lot of guys that wouldn't say anything. You know, like I said, I'd have fuck you matches, you know, I'll never forget in L.A., you know, I fucked up, you know, OT goal. He comes back in and he's like, you fucking face the media. I'm like, fuck you. I'll face the media. I can bring him right in front of the dressing room, in front of everybody. You know, I just gave it right back to him. So there's a lot of, nobody took a swing, but there's a lot of guys that would just take it. You know, I only took so much of it.
Did guys in the room give him shit, well, whether to his face or not, about how well manicured his hair was all the time? It seems like that's something guys would give him shit about.
Oh, fucking, you know, just for men. He always knew when he had a good dye job. You know, those sideburns were nice and painted black. So, you know, we always chirped him, but you know, he wasn't afraid to get in everybody's face.
So, it's a two-part question here. I want to talk about your time in Kansas City, because Pittsburgh was supposed to move there when you were playing there, right? Remember there was all those rumors because they had an arena built?
Yeah, before they got Crosby, thank you, Sid.
I think that's pretty much what changed everything. But as far as Crawford's concerned, I heard he was the type of guy, though, when you came back at him, that's when all of a sudden he would respect you and you'd kind of be one of his boys, kind of like Keenan was.
Yeah, you know, I think I'd have to agree with you because I came back at him all the time. And like you said, you know, I was down in Kansas City. You know, that was one of those stints where he was bag skating me and wasn't letting me play. So they sent me down, you know, they're going to send me down on one of those, you know, 2-week conditioning stints that they used to do to guys. I ended up going to Kansas City playing 2 games and somebody got hurt, you know, thank God you never want anybody to get hurt. But if you're a guy that's, you know, is getting bag skated every day and you guys know you're not in the lineup, you need to get somebody hurt to get back in. So Casey, I had a great 48 hours while I was in Kansas City.
Hey, so I'm kind of going through the Hockey DB. So 2005, 2006, the year after the lockout, you signed with the Islanders. Was that a 1-year deal? Because that year you got traded to the Kings.
Well, that was a two-year deal. And, you know, same thing. You had Mike Miller there as a GM. You know, I told him to go fuck himself. So we had the owner.
Give me the story there.
I brought bad give me the story there. Yeah.
Well, Charles Wong is the owner at that point in time. And, you know, he walks in. It's a Saturday morning. You know, we're at the hotel having pregame before we're getting on the bus and going to Jersey for an afternoon game. And he comes in there, starting to talk, you know, who the hell knows what he's talking about. And he said, I want you to watch the movie Cinderella Man. And, you know, write on the DVD what this means to you, and I want you to hand it in. You know, didn't watch it. I wrote nothing, and I put the receipt and asked for my money back. And so that went over. You know, that went over well. But the Milbury story is, you know, I had an ex nanny try and sue me for $26 million. You know, she tried to accuse me of all this shit. You know, I ended up being on page 6 of the Daily News. You know, Madonna was in the top half and I was in the bottom half. And Milbury told me, hey, just pay this broad off. And I said, fuck you. You know, so he ended up trading me to, yeah.
So this is just some random woman at the time that you, or like what, you were dating her and then?
No. You know, I was married at that time and, you know, we'd hired a nanny and, you know, she wasn't happy with her pay. And, you know, she said she was doing it for all her country people, just try to take me for money. But at the end of the day, I told Milbury to fuck off. I'm not paying you. I'm not paying her. And that's why I got traded.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, that's going to be a one-of-a-kind reason to be traded in the NHL, huh?
I mean, Milbury had a lot of good reasons to trade guys. Sarcasm in my voice. That might fucking take
Shucks, Mike. You traded me to the L.A. Kings. Thanks a lot, you prick.
Yeah, from the island. Yeah, I don't have to deal with you. I don't have an owner that's telling me to go watch Cinderella Man. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you don't have essays. You get the Coles notes.
Were you like, bro, have you not heard of fucking Gladiator?
Yeah. You know, that was you know, that's the nightmare of the shit that's been going on for years in here in Long Island. You know, talk about why did Tavares leave? Well, because it's been a shit show. Gar Snow goes from backup goalie to GM. That'll never happen in history again.
Yeah.
He was, you know, 1 year he was my backup, you know, when I was on the island. And that's when, you know, when he went to GM and he was using dirt on guys that were going out in negotiations the next summer.
Jesus, what a fucking gong show. Well, now it all started with the owner though. It was a little bit of an odd situation. He was like buddies with some of the guys too. I mean, I know DiPietro was good buddies with him.
Just
from the
contract.
Top down, just no foundation to that organization. And it was just a gong show for so many years.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, Yashin got that $90 million. The DiPietro got the, you know, the 15-year contract. And I remember watching an interview and we were in Toronto, you know, he's on Sportsnet, you know, saying that, you know, everybody knows that Rick DiPietro left a lot of money on the table. What, he got $64 million. I'm not sure what he left on the table other than he played, like, what, 30 games? After getting knocked out by Brent Johnson, but that's solid, right? But, you know, exactly. But, you know, back to your point is there was no foundation. It was just a complete shit show. These guys would go to lunch with them, dinner with them, and buddied up with them, and they got millions of dollars.
It sounds like a game plan. Fuck, I should have took that route.
And they roasted him.
I know. Fuck you. And then you ended up going back to Vancouver to finish off that 06-07 season. You spent quite a bit of time in Vancouver. Like, you had to have loved it there.
Did you see Business Documentary?
No.
Oh.
Fuck, Whit, shut up. Don't stir the pot. Forget about that question. Let's stay on topic.
We'll cut that.
Did you read that article with the province? What was it? Vancouver Canucks were 45-0 if the road team came in 2 nights before a game.
Oh yeah. I mean, that makes back. Okay, so when you were playing there, the Roxy was probably at its peak.
Oh, prime Roxy downstairs. Nothing better. Nowhere better.
There's an old saying.
I definitely had my footprint in that place.
Well, there's an old saying: if you walked out empty-handed, that you'd actually have to chop and hand your dick in the next day at the rink.
Oh, 100%. The Roxy was the easiest, put it on a tee, fishing with dynamite that there's ever been.
And then and then you go over to Chicago. And
yeah, man, that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, Whit, take the reins, buddy. Take the reins, Whit.
I remember you got to Chicago and, you played, I think, 2 full years, and then the third year you won the cup. That was it, right?
Yeah.
So it seemed that you fit in perfect there, the role they had you playing. Then the year you won the cup was just a great year for you, especially in the playoffs. What made it such a good fit for you there? How much did you love that city, which I still say is my favorite city in the NHL? So give me a little info into how the career started in Chicago and then, leading into how the Stanley Cup was won and raised by yourself.
Yeah, well, I'll tee this up that I was unrestricted coming to that year in Vancouver, and I didn't have a very good year in LA and Vancouver, so I ended up having to go to Detroit on a tryout.
Really?
And I called my agent, said, we're looking for a right-handed defenseman to play with Nick Lidstrom. Sign me up.
That's a tough job.
Ian White did that for a year.
RA could do that.
Anybody can. So, I'm like, okay, I go there and, Babcock's a coach, which is awesome. Guy's the greatest coach in history, not. So, we're playing some exhibition games. Kenny Holland, calls my agent and says, he's playing well. We'll give him a 1 year deal at $1 million. And, so my agent calls me that morning, and actually that morning we were flying to Toronto to play a home and home with Maple Leafs. So I talked to him. I said, there's a few teams that we're talking to that were give the old same excuse. Oh, we got some young guys, but we want to see how they do. Every team does it every year. And my agent ended up calling Chicago, and Dale Talon was the GM at that point in time. And Talon's like, we'll offer him a 1 year deal. I think it was like $1.3 million. But I'll guarantee him top 4 minutes. So, land in Toronto, talk to my agent. He calls me as soon as we land. And I'm like, I said, I'll take that deal. I said, if he's going to guarantee me top 4 minutes, I said, here in Detroit, I'm competing with Chelios. Guess what? Guess who's going to win? I said, I'm not going to play very many games. I may win the cup, but after that, my career will be over. They'll ship me over to, overseas. So I said, I'll take the deal in Chicago and, go from there. So I said, you call Kenny Holland. Well, get to the rink. I'm talking to my agent. You talk to Kenny Holland? No, he can't get a hold of anybody and in the media. So guys are getting ready for the game. I'm just in my underwear. Guys are like, what are you doing? I'm like, hey, I just signed in Detroit. 5 minutes before warm up, I call my agent. Anything? He goes, no, you got to walk in that room and tell Babcock you're not playing.
Oh, fuck.
So about 2 minutes before warm up, there's no spare. Didn't bring any extra. I walked in. I said, hey, Babs, with everything going on, I got to think about myself and, I'm absolutely not going to play tonight.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Fuck you. Where's the fucking GM? Get the fuck out of here. You what? Fucking cocksucker. Oh, yeah. Whoa. Just motherfucking me.
Babcock said that. I would have gave him a right fucking hook and dropped him, but I'm Team Babcock. Just to rattle.
Where's my contract, buddy? What are you talking about?
Yeah, this is what I got, and I said I got to look out for myself. I blow my knee out. Guess what? You don't give a shit. You're gonna pull that from me. So exactly. Where's the GM? So I'm in Toronto. get my suit. Brian McLean was the assistant. He's like, get your suit and get the fuck out of there. You know, so I'm standing in the hallway, you know, Toronto with, you know, with all the reps from all, you know, all the stick companies are out there. So I'm talking, I'm going, all right, what the fuck am I going to do now? All my stuff's in Detroit. I got to find a flight home. so I ended up taking a limo to Niagara Falls, staying overnight there, flying to out of Buffalo the next day, Detroit, got my stuff, and, you know, I ended up in Chicago. And they said, listen, so if you're, you know, we got a young team here, we want you to come here, but, you know, FYI, you're not going to play the power play. You know, we got Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. We want you to mentor them, and, but you're not going to play the power play. So that's when, you know, Happy Gilmore came into play 364 more days in the batting cage. And I just, you know, I sat there turned into a defenseman, defenseman who just took slap shots off of face. And, you know, it ended up landing me, you know, extension, a few more games, and, you know, and some Stanley Cup at the end of it. You
that was ate, the best decision in your life right there.
You ate telling, shots for breakfast, dude.
You know, it's people ask, you know, at the end of the day, I played scared that my career was going to be over. So I didn't give a shit. I didn't care if it was Shea Weber. I didn't care if it's Chara. You know, I was going to stand in front of there, you know, and that if it, you know, if it's going to hit me, it may break bones. I don't give a shit. But, you know, I'm still playing in the NHL, and I don't have to worry about life after hockey.
So I'll say this, the smartest guys who have usually sometimes the longest longevity in the league are those who adapt. Because you said coming in, you know, you were some skilled defenseman, but by that time, it's like there's a new wave of guys who they're just more mobile, they have harder shots and this and that. And not to say you were the most offensive defenseman, but you're like, in order to fit in nice here and get compensated on the back end of your career, you're going to have to adapt and do things that you maybe didn't do early in your career. And fuck, dude, that's what everyone remembers you for now, is the fact that you were eating pucks with the Chicago Blackhawks, and to go back on when you walked into Babcock's office, that probably was hard to do for you, but that was probably one of the best decisions of your life.
Yeah, you know, it was the toughest, because I'm like, look at this team, you know, look, you know, obviously, you know, Lidstrom, you know, we go down the list, they end up winning the Stanley Cup that year. So I'm like, fuck, you know, I may never win a Stanley Cup. I'm walking away with this. So, you know, basically I was cashing in, you know, I was going all in on myself, knowing yeah. that, you know, if I don't put up the numbers, if I don't have a good year, you know, I fuck myself and fuck myself out of a Stanley Cup that ended up being. But you're exactly right. It ended up being the best decision that I made. Came to Chicago, you know, fit in, obviously, pretty easy group. That was Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane's rookie year. So it was pretty easy. You know, I just had to go out there and, you know, try and mentor these guys and, you know, teach them a little bit, but what are you going to teach a guy like Duncan Keith? So I just let him run, and, you know, I sat there, ate pucks for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and, you know, like I said, played an extra 3 years.
Fred, there is one guy I do want to ask you about. I wonder if you were his mentor in any way. You spent 3 years with him in Chicago, then you actually got traded to Atlanta with him. You were in Atlanta for a brief stretch. Hoping you might have some good Big Buff stories to share with us, Dustin.
Oh, shit.
Big Buff, there is no better man than that guy. He's unbelievable. I'll never forget the stories he'd tell me. He got drafted by Chicago. You know, he unplugged his phone because he didn't want to go to camp because he was, you know, 300 pounds and he didn't give a shit. You know, that was back in the day, no cell phone, so he just unplugged the house phone and they couldn't get a hold of him.
Hey, you know, I think I've told this story on the Soaps, I think I've told this story on the pod before. It was when they brought him in one summer to basically get on the diet and get on the training regimen to get him NHL ready. And they told him he had to start eating better. And sure enough, after he ended up going to like a Cubs game, and he was eating like a big thing of street meat fries with like meat on it and cheese. And one of the brass members, whether it was assistant GM or GM at the time, ended up walking by and seeing him, and he was just scarfing this thing down on the side of the road after a fucking Cubs game.
Oh, they tried everything, bringing you dietitians, and, you know, his girlfriend was living and taking him shopping. They tried everything, but at the end of the day, finally, when, you know, when we won, you know, that year, and, you know, put him up at Ford, you know, what was he playing at? 275, 280. Nobody's going to stop the guy. So finally they just let him go. and kind of let him do what he needed to do. And, you know, look out, end up being a hell of a player.
So that can kind of lead us into something that I think rightfully so I can bring up. And that is, you played in Russia for 4 years, is that true?
3 years. Crazy? 3 years.
3 years. Okay. And now I see the first team you played for, Novokuznetsk. That is a legit trash barrel.
Did you ever go there? Did you play there?
I saw that place. And God, right, so, you are, how did you do that?
So, you know, obviously not too many people there, but if you want to YouTube Crocodile Tears, which is a synthetic heroin, that's the root of it. That's the hometown. So you'll be able to watch that whole city. Yeah, you know, it's
well, RA knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Where they inject it with gasoline or eye drops and their limbs fall off. You'll be able to see my apartment in that video. And, you know, it goes back to Jesus, being so in Chicago.
Fucking, a tough run there, huh?
Oh, it was, drink at night when it wasn't games. But,
so long,
you know, I went over there. There was three or four guys that could speak English, North Americans. Coaches didn't speak English. That next year is when, you know, our trainer committed suicide in the rink with the Russian gas.
Oh, God.
Not our Russian gas, listeners. Not our Russian gas.
Yeah. Well, what have, so, can you elaborate?
In this city, nobody spoke English. You know, you go to a local restaurant and take us 15 minutes to trying to figure out that we wanted some bread. You know, we had absolutely no idea. The Russian gas, everybody knows all about it. Our trainer, we had to go to the rink the night before a game at 7 p.m. for video.
Oh, for my
the
God.
Video
that's
for the
worse
next
than
day.
Baza, whatever that's called.
Yeah. No, we never had Baza, but we had to go for video and, went home, came back the next day. I guess as we left, the trainer got in this little massage table that was heated and he strapped the mask on and he turned on the gas. And, killed himself.
Holy shit.
Jeez, that's not good for the t-shirt sales.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, Grinnelli, have them cut the t-shirts. But for those who are wondering what Baza meant, or is that what it's called, Whit?
Baza, yeah. I've talked about it before. You got
we have new listeners, Whit.
Yeah. Yeah, some people. Actually, Soaps, why don't you explain it? You spent more time in Russia than I did.
Yeah, it's so it all depends what team, but there's a lot of teams that went. You had to go sleep in these barricades where where the Russian army was the night before a game. You had to be at the Baza by 6 or 7, and you had to stay overnight there. Single beds where you put your laptop on on this Baza on this bed, and you got about half an inch on each side, and everybody in the team had to stay there night before. Every single game, and it was a nightmare. Thank God, in Novokuznetsk, we didn't have to. That whole place was a nightmare anyway, so didn't have to worry about the Baza.
So this Baza, like what if a guy had like a pregame night ritual of like tugging one off? Like were any of these guys like just like doing shit like that in the Baza, or was it like pretty just everyone went to sleep?
Right, everybody went. It was awful. Everybody, because they watch, at the end of the day, as Whit knows, it's they watch every move you make. They go for quantity, not quality. So there's no rest. There's no nothing. They're watching every move you make. They own you. They're making sure that the Russians don't get out, because every chance that they have, they're going out to drink the warm beer with the straw. So it was watched pretty heavily on everything that went on.
God help whoever was in Russia watching me throw myself around the room. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, thank God nobody spoke English, because I have no idea.
That's a scary thought.
You always knew when they're yelling at you, but I didn't give a shit. I didn't know what they were saying. So
they're showing you game care. Tape of yourself, beat the wheels off your cock. You're like, oh, what, shit, dude. Like, what are you, Lou Lamorello sneaking in my room while I'm at practice?
Hey, but you spent a year playing for Ufa. That I actually didn't mind where they were located. That was a fun rink. The team's pretty good. Is that better? You must have enjoyed that more.
Yeah, you know, it was way better. You know, Nova Kuznets was always interesting. You know, I don't know, if you had this, you know, that doctor that, you know, killed himself. When I first got there, he's like, you know, hand signaling that I got to go to the hospital, you know, to get my blood taken, you know, because I need an HIV test for, you know, for my visa. Well, you know, I walk up there. There's this glass. It looks like it's fucking Dairy Queen. The lady opens up the window exactly like, you know, you're ordering. You're getting your order from Dairy Queen. I shove my arm in there, and she grabs this needle that's wide open. It's probably been used by 10 people, and just jabs it in my arm. You know, so well, if I didn't have AIDS before, you know, I got it now.
Hey, speaking of the needle story, that reminds me of when I broke my toe. I was playing in the American League, and we were playing up in St. John's, and it was bugging me so bad at that point that I had to get it frozen before games. Well, the guy who was supposed to freeze it, like the team doctor for the St. John's or whatever, it's in the AHL, it's the jungle. Well, he's late, so I'm fucking waiting to go out. I'm almost going to miss warm-up here. This guy finally
That's when you're like,
in.
This is pro hockey. What the fuck? Where's this guy?
So finally he wheels in. He slowly gets like a new needle together. It wasn't a used one, so thank God. But this guy, he sticks it in my big toe, and it's going out the other side, and he starts like pushing the fluid out, and it's spraying. And I'm like, buddy, it's not even in my fucking toe, man. Are you a doctor? And he's like, well, I'm a veterinarian. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Luckily, he backed it up a little bit, squirted some in the toe, and I think I fought twice in the first period, and I got kicked out, and I went and got shit-faced in St. John's, and it was a good time.
Hey, Soaps, I've actually told this story before that when I was doing my, you know, you got to do the blood work, when I right when I got to Russia, the lady taking my blood was smoking a cigarette in my face when she was doing it. In the hospital.
How many rinks did you walk out with a haze of smoke sitting across there? Because everybody's got the darts on, and everybody's got their jackets and their hats on because there's no heat in the rinks.
Jesus. So now, Soaps, were you there for the love of the game, or like were you a little like broke, or like what was the situation that you stayed there for so long?
Make money, right?
Yeah. At the end of the day, it was money. Like I said, I was so scared of ending my career. I didn't matter where I was going to go. I was going to, you know, going to go to Nova Kuznets, which is you know, the worst place ever, you know, end up in Ufa. But I didn't give a shit what I was going to have to do. Same thing as Chicago. If I gotta, you know, play with broken bones and, you know, take them off the chin, off the teeth, I was going to do that because I was, you know, I was scared shitless of the game of hockey being over.
Now, would you say Russia was good or bad for you at that point in your life and career? Was it something that you're glad you did, or you kind of like, eh, maybe I shouldn't have done that?
You know, I'll never say I'm glad I did it. You know, I was in and out of what, 14 countries. You know, these stories that there's only Witt and a few others that they can validate them because it's, you know, it's that fucking crazy. But you know, I can say I lived through it. I lived through all those planes. You know, guys, you know, smoking on the plane, opening the back where all the luggage is, sitting in the back of the bags, drinking beers and smoking darts on the plane. You know, I lived through all that shit to tell the stories.
One story that a few of the more modern day guys talk about that are still over there, some of my buddies, is they say you show up to some cities on the road and there'll be like 15 hookers waiting in the lobby. And some of the Russian guys will just like call down the lobby and say, yeah, send up the one with the green dress.
Oh yeah. You know, they lived for their beers and their hookers. It didn't matter. You know, you go to Moscow, you know, half the bars were, were whorehouses. You just take them and, you know, are you sportsmen? You know, all the hookers, you sportsmen? Yeah, you stay hotel? Yeah, I know that one. Oh, so it's hookers and beers, as you should probably know, everywhere.
No, I don't know anything.
I'm not a pay for play guy, and I swear I'm not just saying that for the podcast and that I don't want to be canned by the Coyotes. But
I don't want to be canned.
Which I'm sure once this comes out, I will. One of my buddies said that he had the two of the hottest women he's ever seen same night, and it cost him like $800. And like I said, I'm not down for the pay to play because you also don't know what kind of situation those girls are in either. They treat women like shit over there. I ain't fucking down with that.
Hey, wasn't it insane, Sopel? Did you have any like examples of seeing the Russians when they would have like their girlfriend and then their wife to like the game the next night?
Well, that was every game. You know, it was tradition there to to get married at a young age, 18, 19, 20, and have two or three girlfriends on the side. That's
what
you
married
did.
So young. They got married so young over there.
Hey, there was a girlfriend section and there was a wives section at the rink. They were in the opposite corners.
And they were just like, I better have a better bag than that bitch.
You know, they didn't give a shit. You know, like you said, they treated their women or their dogs better than women. You know, they tell their wife to go home and I'm going out. You got no choice. You know, get puddled till, you know, 9 a.m, then go back to, you know, show up to practice completely in the bag. And then you go home or disappear for 5 days, not tell anybody where you are, go on a bender and show up like, you know, nothing happened.
Did you ever dummy anyone in a game? Did you ever fight over there at all?
Yeah, I got in a few fights over there. You know, you know, chasing these fuckers around, you know, thinking they're all that, getting, you know, paid. So yeah, I got to get in a few guys' face, got in a few fights, but you know, they wanted nothing to do with that. There was a, you know, it was a beer league, no hitting. You know, don't touch me, I won't touch you league. So you know, there's a ton of skill. You know, Kovalchuk was over there when I was there. Tarasenko, Panarin. So it was guys like that on the big ice, you know, being as bad a skater as I am. I had to work 10 times as hard chasing these fuckers around.
Did you ever have any issues with getting paid on time? You know, I imagine Novo Kuznets had some issues.
You know what? No, I can honestly say I got my money, all my money on time. I never had a problem anywhere.
That is not normal.
Yeah, not normal at all. Novo Kuznets is as shitty as the place was. I got my money. You know, they probably shorted me, you know, some like a change here or there. But I got my money. I didn't have to fight for it. I didn't have to yell and scream or threaten not to play. But I was lucky, one of the lucky ones that always deposited my bank account. As soon as it deposited, I got it the fuck out of the country.
Hey, did you talk to any guys from the team that had all the fighters on it where the owner was a crazy Russian and apparently he would go into the locker room with like AK-47s and shit?
Yeah, VCs? Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I knew a lot of guys. You know, in that league, when you're you're North American, you just want to see another North American to say hi, you know, to feel like you can speak English.
Like help me.
So I was like, fucking, you know, I looked to see who's on the team just if I can talk to somebody, you know, think I'm normal again, that I could talk to them. So yeah, we played them many times, but obviously, thank God they didn't chase after me because, you know, guys like Morassi would have beat the fuck out of me.
Quick question, actually going back to Chicago Soaps. The last game of the 2010 Cup versus Philly. Did you know Patrick Kane shot? Did you see it go in? Did you know it went in? Like, oh, you one of those confused people that didn't know what was going on?
No, I think I was the last one off the bench because, you know, obviously everything I'd gone through, this is towards the end of my career. You know, Marion Hossa had lost 2 cups in a row. I was scared shitless that, you know, it didn't go in and we were going to end up coming back. Yeah, exactly. You know, bad karma ended up coming and losing. So, I had no idea. I kind of slowly throw the leg over, you know, over the boards. And I was at center ice kind of skating backwards, looking at the bench, waiting for, you know, confirmation from, you know, from the coaches. You know, half the guys, you know, still don't know, still never seen it go in. But they tell me it went in, the party went on. So lucky to say that, you know, that did go in. I was happy to win Stanley Cup.
I love that that's your story now, that you were nervous, didn't go in, but you were really grabbing your phone quick and texting Babcock, fuck you.
Yeah, first thing I did as soon as I got back in the dressing room, you know, right past the boys partying, you know, big fuck you text to Babs.
We're going to have to get a Babcock support group between what you and Mike Commodore started soon.
Oh, we're just scratching the surface. We can go on.
Oh, God. Well, now, we'll have to get you on again because you've been very entertaining. Ra, you got one more?
Yeah, I got one more, actually. After you did Russia, you came back, you played at the AHL in Chicago. Now, was that just to make sure that hockey was out of your system? Because you didn't play a whole year. I think you played like 20 or 30 games. Was that just to make sure you were completely done with hockey?
No, you know what? I was short of 1,000 regular season professional games by, I think it was like 30 or 40. So, you know, and you know, I had kids at that point in time, so – you know, three years in Russia, you know, was enough, you know, not seeing the kids for 9 months a year. So I came back here and I wanted to hit that 1,000 games. you know, even though it's not the, you know, not the silver stick in the NHL where you, you know, you got that, you know, that policy, but I, you know, I got a Stanley Cup and I can say I played a, you know, 1,000 professional regular season games. So, you know, I can hang my hat on that. A lot of guys can't.
It's a hell of a feather in your hat, for sure.
For sure.
But, you know, it doesn't matter here. It's all about what have you done for lately. So, you know, everybody's like, fuck you. Where are you at now?
Well, Soaps, I want to talk to you a little bit about that. Like, we've talked about the hockey side of it. You know, you've obviously had some ups and downs in your personal life that you've been very vocal about, which to me, I not only commend that, but you've now been helping out a ton of people, even away from the game, just fans. And I just want you to touch on that briefly and give fans a perspective of where you've been and what you've come back from.
Yeah, you know, you heard me say a couple times that I played, you know, I played scared. You know, as a kid, you know, I was told that I was, you know, dumb and stupid. I was reading at a grade four level going into, you know, grade nine freshman. And, you know, I was just school fucking sucked. Hated it. You know, couldn't read, couldn't do anything. You know, I probably haven't passed grade eight. You know, they just passed me along because I was a hockey player. And, you know, it wasn't until later on, you know, I had kids. I think I ended up being 33 or 34 years old when I found I had dyslexia. You know, it kind of made sense going, all right, all those years I wasn't dumb. You know, I just couldn't figure it out. But, you know, it doesn't change the fact that I still have a hard time reading and writing emails. So, you know, I played in fear all those years, you know, knowing that, you know, I'm going to have 40, 50 years of my life or, you know, have to get back in the workforce. And how do I write a resume when I can't write a fucking email? You know what I do. So, you know, I hit the sauce pretty hard. You know, I was drinking a ton, trying to get the pain to go away, knowing, you know, am I going to find a job? Am I not going to find a job? You know, I got kids to support. I got bills to pay. You know, I made money, but, you know, I ended up getting divorced. So, there goes that and what I do. So, you know, I hit the ball pretty hard and, you know, thanks to, you know, actually Biz, one of your buddies, Noah Ferrara, you know, had the balls enough to, you know, have a support group and toss me into rehab and, you know, kind of get my life back on track. If it wasn't for him, where would I be? That's a good question. I could probably say I wouldn't be here today. And, you know, next week is being sober 2 years.
Oh, man, congratulations. That's fucking awesome. And man, I know you know, kind of ripped on yourself a little bit there for like not being able to read and write. You sound like you're an articulate guy. Like, I mean, you might have a career in media, whether it's doing radio or fuck, man, maybe we even throw a fifth guy on the podcast for crying out loud the way you're buzzing tonight.
Oh, fucking, you know, I don't know if I'm at your level, boys, but, you know, it's, you know, there was no straight line A to B for me. You know, it was zigzag and no matter where I was, you know, as my kids grew up, I couldn't read them children's stories. So I had to make up children's story books. And I had three characters, Pinky, Greenie, and Blackie. And I just, you know, make up stories. They went to the fucking Six Flags and Greenie pissed his pants. And, you know, my kids are laughing and having a good time. But, you know, that was the way I covered up, you know, that's the way I cover up my, you know, my insecurities about, you know, about not reading. And, you know, it's, you know, everybody learns in a different way, but, you know, still struggling on a day-to-day basis about it, but, you know, finally feeling at least, you know, pretty good about who I am today.
So personality-wise, when you get to talk about it and all these people heard your stories and everyone was so positive towards you after hearing it, do you feel that it helps to talk about it, or are you less upset and insecure about it?
Yeah, you know what? For all those years, you know, I didn't know what it was, and then when I found out what it was, you know, I thought I was the only one. You know, what a fucking selfish idiot. You know, I'm not, you know, dyslexia is 1 in 5 kids have it or people have it. So, you know, coming out and talking about it, you know, I have parents emailing me all the time, you know, kids, you know, help me with their kid. What do I do here? You know, what do I do there? So, you know, if I can help one kid and have him not feel the way I do, you know, every single day, that's why I end up, starting the Brent Sokol Foundation. And it is, you know, for dyslexia. So, you know, trying to help these kids, you know, get their self-esteem, because at the end of the day, that's it. You know, if you don't have any self-esteem, start high school, what are you going to turn to? You're going to turn to drugs, drinking, and it's going to lead you down a bad path. And thank God I had hockey, or guaranteed I would have been down a bad path a lot earlier.
Yeah, we'll make sure to send out the link to your foundation for all our listeners when we air this episode.
Yeah, you know what? That'd be greatly appreciated. And like I said, people don't understand that dyslexia is hereditary and it's 1 in 5. So, you know, you got kids, you walk in that classroom, you know, break the numbers down. It's pretty staggering.
Yeah, and listen, talking to you has been a lot of fun. I think that you should be really proud. I mean, I remember playing against you just thinking you were an absolute warrior. You played for a long time, growing up on a farm where a lot of people told you you wouldn't be able to ever make it, and you proved a lot of people wrong. So not only that, but then the off-ice issues that you've dealt with and where you're at now. So you should be proud, and we really appreciate you coming on. So thank you.
No, honors all my boys. You know what? Listen to you all the time. So I appreciate you taking the time for me. We all know your schedules are busy, making all the big bucks that you guys are now. So I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks a lot, Soaps. Really appreciate it. And Barstool Chief said to say hello, too, by the way.
Oh, guy's got no idea what he's talking about every single day. I can't believe you guys associate with that fucker.
Fuck on that one, Chief.
Ouch. All right. Take care, my friend. Thanks for coming on. That interview was also brought to you by Eagle Energy. Eagle Energy started as a great idea. Take all the benefits of an energy drink and remove the negatives to create an innovative product that delivers caffeine faster without any calories or sugar. You know, me and Biz have been slurping on these things for months because they work. They don't get you too wired. They just keep you going, man. It's a great product. Eagle Energy is a caffeine inhaler made of all natural plant-based ingredients, providing the user with a natural energy boost via inhalation. It's a new thing, and it's great. It's got guarana, ginseng, and taurine in it. The guarana fruit packs twice the concentration of caffeine than a coffee bean. It enhances energy levels, mood, and reaction time. You want to know a little more? Sure. Eagle Energy contains approximately 400 inhalations. It can last a day or a week. You're in control. Whatever you're comfortable with, that's what you do. Biz goes a little overboard sometimes, but you might want to do a little less than him, not get as fired up. Whatever works for you, that's what you do. The suggested serving size to provide a fast-acting energy boost is 25 consecutive inhalations. When you inhale caffeine, it is metabolized rapidly. Who wants to wait 30 minutes? Nuh-uh. You get it instantly with Eagle Energy. And with zero sugar and zero nicotine, it's difficult to find a healthier way of getting your energy boost. Eagle Energy is perfect for someone who is always on the go. Whether you're studying or on a long trip, partying or on the ski hill, Eagle Energy is always within reach. So use the promo code BIZ20 for 20% off your order at Eagle Energy. Try it again. Eagle Energy, promo code BIZ20.
Thank you very much to Brent Sopel. Great guy who had a lot of good stories for us. As you heard, he experienced the KHL, the Russian way of life a little bit. So also for people who are wondering, Joel Quenneville's firing didn't come up because that's one of the interviews we banked. It kind of sucks for us when that happens, when stuff breaks. We're going to try to be better at not banking so far in advance, but I'm busy. Busy. Everyone's kind of busy except for Grinnelli. He's just busy getting after it. So we're gonna try our best, but sometimes it's just too far in advance. And also, he was over on Redline Radio, I believe, just recently, a Chicago-based sports podcast, part of Barstool's network. So check him out over there, too. But thank you very much to Brent.
Very, very interesting interview. I love talking to guys like that who just have a kind of a unique way of looking at things, a unique perspective. And he had the all-time fucking Russian gas story. I don't think we can ever top that one. I mean, that was next level.
We'll have to send some guys over there to play just to bring more back.
Oh, seriously, right? Holy shit. Another story. We were just talking about the Metro Division a few minutes ago, Biz. Our buddy Tom Wilson, he did appeal a suspension. It was reduced from 20 games to 14 games. However, the Capitals have already played 16 games, so he's going to get his money back, but he gets fucked out of those two games. The team gets fucked out of those two games. Those are two games he couldn't score, add totals to, you know, his career totals. And Brian Burke made, you know, do you want to mentioned it. All right. Brian Burke did an interview the other night, and he basically was saying, like, they should have fixed this. After Dennis Weidman appealed his suspension, it got reduced, and he came back after there was so many games already played. He got fucked out of games. Like, basically, if you're going to get your suspension reduced, you shouldn't have the team already played that many more games than you're going to be suspended for. So, and they didn't fix it then, and now we're seeing Tom Wilson get fucked again. And I think almost the league almost does it on purpose, knowing that the appeal is going to lower the number. So, like, if they delay it, it allows them to get a little more fucking games out of it.
Some people commenting, of course, on Twitter didn't really grasp what he was trying to say. He's not taking the player or the situation into consideration. What he's saying is after the Weidman situation, this should have been addressed, because both the NHLPA and league can come together and say, hey, listen, let's figure out a quicker way to get this handled so this doesn't happen again. So now it's happened twice. Let's hope they take the proper steps in order to address it. That way we don't have this come up again. I don't think anyone is sympathizing, or a lot of people aren't sympathizing for Tom Wilson in his situation, but they're just saying the overall situation.
They're definitely going to have to figure out something, whether, you know, how the arbitrator is going to work, how's it going to be. But that is an issue that I'm sure will get solved at some point. I hope it does. Moving on, we had a milestone on Tuesday night in the NHL. Jumbo Joe Thornton scored his 400th goal in just a phenomenal game. 5-4 win for the Sharks, who were up 3-0 against Nashville. Nashville comes all the way back, takes the lead 4-3. San Jose ties it up. And then what a way to get your 400th as the winning goal on home ice. A big-time celebration. You know, Jumbo keeps it pretty at a minimum with his cellies. You know, usually just a low-key fist pump, maybe. But you see a big arm swing up against the glass. He was fired up, and deservingly so. Hall of Fame player. You saw Brent Burns sent out a really nice tweet after. You know, you could tell it was a heartfelt tweet talking about just how appreciative he is to not only get to play with Joe Thornton, but meet him become his friend. Said he's as good, better guy off the ice than a player he is on the ice, which is saying something. And also, Joe Thornton just always seems to be smiling. And I know that it's hard not to when you've had the career he's had. But I need everyone to do me a favor and check out the NHL players in the history of the NHL who have 400 goals and 1,000 assists. And it's an insane list. I think it's around 12 guys. It was on NHL Network today. Maybe Grinnelli, we can get that out on Instagram. But it's insane company. So congrats to him.
And we got Selly season. Budweiser sponsored us. That's on the Monday segments. But I think we definitely need an honorable mention to him, because you mentioned he's not very candid when he scores, because, you know, we all know, hey, I'm a passer. That's what he tells us.
I'm a disher. I'd rather a sick apple.
Hey, I'm a disher. But he ended up big fist pump. And then the funniest part was when he went by the line, and you could tell the boys were so fired up, not only because it was the go-ahead goal, but just because it was his 400. There was such a special moment. The post-game interview was unbelievable. So he's going to be our Thursday edition of Selly season. And we're going to crown him the victor on this episode. So congratulations to Jumbo Joe. I did text him. He said that maybe he'll make time for us on an interview. He hates doing this type of stuff, but hey, hopefully soon enough we can get him out of his shell and he can join us.
I'd say he's definitely.
He's an in-person guy. He's a must in-person guy. I'd fly to him. I'll fly to Switzerland. I think his wife's from there. We'll go over to Swiss, have some chocolate, hang out with Jumbo.
He's definitely the sentimental favorite, though, I'd say, in the league for the guy that everybody wants to win a cup. I mean, you know, Ovechkin was obviously up there, but I think Joe Thornton's a guy, you know, no matter where you're from, what city you're living or what team you root for, man, you would love to see Thornton get another crack at it for sure. Biz, you had a big signing in your neck of the woods, correct?
Jacob Chychrun got extended. I think it's a great, I wouldn't call it a gamble, but, you know, Chychrun has had quite a bit of adversity the last few seasons. He tore his left and right ACL in the last 2 years, has had limited time. But this guy is like Wolverine. Always comes back before schedule. He fucking works his balls off in the gym. He had to spend the entire summer in Philadelphia recovering away from his family. The mental grind that this kid has been through has been ridiculous. I feel bad for him because he's such a good kid. He ends up getting rewarded, though, for his commitment to not only coming back in recovery, but just, you know, he's a stud. I think he's going to be a star. And the Coyotes, I think, get a really good deal. Why don't you hit us with the exact terms here, R.A.?
Yep, he signed a six-year extension worth $27.6 million, comes out to $4.6 million a year. And I'll tell you, man, that the Coyotes, you know, because everyone goofs on you, calling them wagon and stuff, but they've really assembled quite a back end there. They, you know, they now have Chychrun, Nicholas Shalmerson, Super Nintendo Shalmerson, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Alex Goligoski, and Jason Demers all signed through at least the 2021 season. I mean, that's what you need. You need, you know, a core, a good core, consistency in the lineup, and you know, Arizona's building something there.
And Whit, before I hand it off to you here, I think that he's going to be a very good top four defenseman, produce fair offensive numbers. I believe he would probably have been a $6 million type defenseman, maybe $5.5 million without the injuries. You know, let's hope he plays beyond that contract. And Whit, I want to ask you, for a guy who's been through that the last 2 years and how big of a mental grind going from back-to-back very significant serious injuries, I mean, you had the same thing happen. Like, what's that like, just – I mean, living in your own head for that long, not being able to play.
It's the hardest thing in the world, Biz. I mean, I was coming off of, you know, major ankle surgery, like my 17th, and finally got back after battling, you know, all summer, all training camp. The season before was when the rehab started. And first game, I got tripped up and, you know, didn't tear my MCL, but had a bad sprain in my MCL. And then right away, you're just thinking, oh, my God, again? Like, I have to restart this. And that was, I mean, he tore his ACL. He had major, major surgery. And the fact that he came back that quick shows that he is a beast. He's also handsome as hell. Tyson Nash on NHL Network, they were asking him, how excited is the team to have him back? He's like, how excited is every woman in the world to get this guy back on the ice?
Oh, he's
handsome. He's a complete man rocket. By the way, do we have some man rocket ugly sweaters coming out? Oh, boy, I won't take mine off. It'll just smell like BO the whole time. I don't care. I love the look of it. Also, we want to say good luck to Scotty Upshaw. He had surgery. Big fan of the show. Everyone knows he's one of Biz and I's boys. Great guy. So good luck to him in the rehab. He rehabbed a little in Vail. He's going to come on in the future. We'll get some Scotty Upshaw talk, which everyone will love. And other than that, I don't know. We got anything else, boys? A little longer episode, but nice to be chatting. This is making my ride go a little quicker.
One thing before I have a very serious question for you, Ryan Whitney. I will get scalded from Red Wings fans if I don't mention the fact that they beat my beloved Coyotes. The Wings are one of the hottest teams in the league right now, 7-1 in their last 8, 5 wins in a row. I was getting slaughtered online with Wings fans commenting about my wagon comment about the Coyotes. The most I've been bullied online by any fan base, so you guys have bragging rights, but they'll be traveling to the desert soon, and we're going to get revenge. Now, before we end this episode, we still have the funny story that we need to hear about Grinnelli, but Whit, I need, like, the fucking oxygen to breathe. I need to hear your thoughts on the Draymond Green and Kevin Durant situation.
Sickly.
Oh, I was actually wrote this down. I wanted to bring it up. I forgot. Are those two clowns kidding me? Actually, Draymond Green, what a goon he is. What a goon. Dude, you shouldn't be the one trying to dribble it down the court and hit the game-winning shot, you selfish clown. This would honestly, by the way, Kevin Durant, I think he's a two-time Finals MVP at least the one time. He's a bitch, but he's got burner accounts going after 13-year-olds. Complete bitch in terms of how he lives his life online. But he's an absolute gamer, sick jump shot. He hits him to win the games all the time. So Draymond takes it. That would be like me wheeling the net if we were down a goal in Pittsburgh and Sid's like, hey, Beaver tapping me. Winnie, I'm open in the middle. Whit, I'm still open. Whit, I'm way ahead of you. What are you doing? And I skate off sides or fall into the bench and we lose. Like, dude, pass the puck. And then you know what? I would have said, Sid, I'm so sorry. I had a brain cramp. I don't know what I was doing. You know what Draymond said? You're a bitch, KD. Fuck off. I don't need to pass you the ball. This is my world. I'm making the big bucks on this. It's my team. And then Durant's like, fuck off. And then the other guys, we got Boogie Cousins grabbing him. And then Boogie say, it's all good. It's all good. You the man. Don't even worry. He's like, no, fuck off, Boogie. They don't get it. I'm the man. I'm disgusted by that entire thing. Something where we can vent maybe every Thursday episode about the other stuff. Because there was also crying on the court when Rose had like a 50-point game. Like if Bergeron, after missing a year from a concussion, came back and had a 4-goal game, he'd be crying in the middle of the game. Get out of here. I mean, it's just, it's furious. I know people probably think I'm just like ranting and don't feel this way, but I actually hate that. I hate the NBA.
Sorry, I couldn't tell. That one was ridiculous. Apparently, it ended up going into the locker room, and it's just like, Draymond, you're a role guy on a very good team. Just dish the goddamn ball. And you know what you said, Whit? If he did screw up and the guys are like, yo, buddy, dish that, he's got to be like, boys, I fucked up. I had the brain cramp, but no.
Exactly.
Very stubborn. Boys, do we cover the Jamie Benn fight?
We hadn't mentioned it, no, because we had a lot of shit to talk about tonight.
Yeah, there's a ton of shit. Sorry this one ran a little long, but before we wrap up, I need to hear this story from Grinnell.
Well,
no, it's my story.
Yeah, I think it would do a lot better if Whit told it. But let me.
My bad. I thought it was yours.
Let me preface by saying, me, Whitney, Brett Merriman, Young Page Views, and Rudy went out last night and got some drinks. And Whit wasn't too pleased.
And Frankie Borelli.
And Whit wasn't too
pleased. Suck on that, Frankie. Suck on that, buddy. I know you're listening.
Whit wasn't too pleased with office manager Brett's drink of choice. So Whit, why don't you tell the story?
Chris, you will not believe this move by this kid. Nice kid, fluffy hair. Nice kid, though. I met him in Saratoga for a few minutes this summer. Nice guy. Comes out for beers. You know, so I go up to the bar. Hey, I don't need a drink. All right, so we had been on the IPAs, but we switched over. We were having some vodka sodas, New Amsterdam vodka. Absolute winner. So we're having some, and I said, all right, well, we need 3 vodka sodas and we need 2 beers. I think, or 3 beers. Some guys are still having beers. All of a sudden, this Brett kid, like, behind my shoulder, like, I feel his hair bump into my shoulder. It's, like, soft as a pillow. Like, what the hell? He's like, did you order the drinks yet? I'm like, yeah, I just ordered the 3 vodka sodas and 3 beers. She hasn't started making them. He's like, oh, I'm going to switch mine. She's like, what? He's like, could I get a pumpkin spice flavor, short rim, spiced rim, sugar on the bottom and the top, martini? I was like, dude, are you kidding me right now? You should have seen the look she gave him. She's like, instead of making 3 vodka sodas and getting 3 IPAs, I have to make you this drink. Dude, it took her 25 minutes, and he got this thing in a glass that, honest to God, you could hold it with your index finger and your thumb. I'm doing that while I'm driving right now, and I'm just sipping like an old lady in England drinking tea. And it was just, I've never seen anything like it in my life. I was dumbfounded. Brunelli, was it not deservingly like me to be, what is going on right? What planet am I living on?
Yeah, I was rattled. I was most rattled by the way he did it, how you were just like, yeah, we'll take 3 vodka sodas and 3 more of those IPAs. And he squeezed in and he was like, actually, scratch that. I'll take a pumpkin espresso martini with the sugar on the rim.
Pumpkin spice espresso. He's like, I need some energy. So this espresso martini will, and the pumpkin flavor of fall. I'm like, Brett, dude, honest to God, you're jump-starting a puke right now for me. I'm having nightmares about this.
So the bartender,
dude, I had a nightmare last night. I woke up in a sweat to a dream of that kid doing it to me again.
Boys, I can't really chime in on this because I'm bad order guy, but that's more so with food sometimes. But yeah, that's a tough drink order.
Craziness. All right, well, guys, this is a long episode.
Yeah. Hey, one quick one. I've been asked a bunch. People want to know Man Rocket status, the Blackhawks coach, Jeremy Colleton. I haven't seen a good enough pitch yet, so you guys got to vote on that, or should we see?
You know what he's got? He's got that, like, Tobey Maguire look, where, like, you know.
He looks like the guy who played the Scarecrow in one of the Batmans with Robin, Christian Bale.
Cillian Murphy, man, great actor.
Wow, good call, Whit.
And, dude, how about Uppy, though? Yeah. Scotty Upshaw, even in his post-operation, he's got bedhead, a Johnny hanging off him, oxygen tubes, wires everywhere.
3 Cialis in him.
Still a goddamn Man Rocket. I was like, oh, just come out of surgery, and he should be on the cover of GQ.
Well, coming out of surgery, you feel great, though, usually.
Yeah. Well, boys, that was an unbelievable episode. I know we ran a little bit long, but there was a ton to talk about. Glad we mentioned some teams that we don't normally get to talk about. So we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Have a great weekend, all.